everyone, and welcome to We Blame Harry Styles, a podcast dedicated to the work of musician, model, actor, and icon Harry Styles, as well as his numerous talented collaborators.
This week in episode 5, we are actually going to bypass the news, as nothing much happened this week, but we are going to have an extended conversation on a topic that is sure to be uncontroversial, Harry Styles in One Direction.
Yeah, we'll see about that. My name is Keith.
And I'm Gray.
And what do we blame Harry this week for?
The cross earring that I'm wearing. It's like he wore it on some sort of award show at some point, just like a little dangly cross.
And I have one George just like Michael it. Look.
Oh yeah, I'm vibing with that. What do you blame him for this week?
I blame Harry for the sheer amount of One Direction content that I've watched for this past week, because it's been so much, and we'll get into it, but it's so much. I really thought so much about it. It's too much. No one should think this much about One Direction in 2021.
Key, have you been binging those Liri videos again, the Lirry videos?
Don't slander me like this, listeners. Please know that you placed your trust in me, and that trust was not placed there wrongly.
Anyway, okay, so our main segment obviously is going to be Harry Styles in One Direction. So we're going to talk about what our goals for the episode are, why we wanted to do this, and what this episode won't be. So our goals for this episode are mainly to analyze Harry's place in One Direction and talk about the artistry of the band, the output of the band, you know, all sorts of like the music and performance element is really what we want to talk about. So this episode, unfortunately for some of you, it's not going to be a review of the other members' solo careers. It's not going to be shady One Direction opinions, although I do appreciate that almost every single one of the spicy One Direction opinions that I asked to be sent to my inbox was not even about their music. You guys really have some stuff going on in your brains. You know,
so to be clear, you have a curious cat attached to your Twitter that you asked for people's spicy One Direction.
Yeah, I asked for people's spicy One Direction opinions on my curious cat, and none of them will be featured here because all of you are way too spicy about everybody's personal lives. We just can't have it on this podcast. But thank you for sharing it with me privately. You know, we all got to have some opinions to get us through the day.
Yeah, so to go into a little bit to why I thought it was kind of important to do this, right, is that Harry is famous, you know, because of One Direction. Like, you know, who knows if One Direction hadn't happened, like maybe he would be famous and making music and that would be his job now. It's hard to say because the first five years of his career were in that band. And so we're a Harry Styles podcast. And I think that from that perspective, it's an important thing for us to talk about. Yeah, we're like Gray said, we're not a One Direction podcast. I wouldn't consider myself to put this out there at the front that much of a One Direction fan. Maybe after this week, I'm kind of skating on thin ice when I say that. But that's not really our perspective. Our perspective is kind of to anchor this towards Harry and then to talk about our opinions about, you know, One Direction's music and to have some fun talking about it in that respect. But that's kind of what we wanted to do with this episode.
Yeah, I think that pretty much explained it exactly how it needed to be explained. So, Key, do you want to take us through, for anybody who doesn't know, I suppose, a brief history of One Direction?
Yeah, so I'll cite that this is from the Encyclopedia Britannica, which I just found amusing to read the Encyclopedia Britannica's entry on One Direction. So I assume most people know this already, but I think it's just nice to give like a little brief overall. This is what this is to start out. So One Direction is a British-Irish male vocal group whose stylish good looks and bright pop rock sound captivated fans around the world in the early 2010s. The members were Niall Horan, Zayn Malik, Liam Payne, Harry Styles, and Louis Tomlinson. So the group formed in 2010 on the British television show The X Factor. Each of the five members auditioned separately, but then they were advised to pool their talents early in the competition, and they placed third overall. So then they were offered a recording contract, and they built up their fan base around 2011 by touring the UK with fellow X Factor contestants, and then they recorded their first album, Up All Night, which came out in 2011. So its popularity fueled in part by the song What Makes You Beautiful, which somehow even made it to my ears at the time. and then One Direction, aided by particularly social media, took over kind of the overseas market. traditionally it's been difficult for British boy bands to break into the American market. So One Direction, one of its biggest, you know, aspects and why it was so successful is because it broke so successfully into the US market. And then the group extended its worldwide success with its sophomore release, Take Me Home, in 2012. And then in 13, they released a movie, One Direction's This Is Us, a third album, Midnight Memories. And then 2 years later, while touring in support of the album Four, so that would be in 2014, One Direction announced that Zayn Malik had left the group. The remaining four continued to tour, but announced a planned hiatus shortly before the release of Made in the AM in 2015. So that was 5 years ago, and a lot has happened in the meantime.
Thank you so much for that introduction to this new band that I have just heard about. just kidding. I hear about One Direction on the timeline every day. But we should maybe talk about what our relationship to it before this week was. When did you first become aware of One Direction, Key? How old are you?
Oh my God. Okay. So when did What Makes You Beautiful come out? Like 2011?
It was my freshman year of college. So.
Wow. That's wild. I was 13 years old. Up All Night came out in 2011. So I think it was 2011.
It must have been 2011. But the first time I heard it was in 2012. Because I think that that's when, I don't know, maybe that's when it started peaking in the States.
Yeah, that would probably make sense.
Mm-hmm. So did you hear it when you were 12?
I did, yeah. So when Up All Night first came out, when What Makes You Beautiful first hit the airwaves, I definitely heard it. That's like one of the only One Direction songs that I have any sort of nostalgia for. Mm-hmm. Because I do have actually a very distinct memory of, I was in like a middle school theater production over the summer, and we would have like dance parties. We like once a day, it was at this like thing I was doing. It was like a camp or mm-hmm. something. We would do like a 5-minute dance party. And I have like a distinct memory of that song playing and doing a dance to that song.
Oh my gosh. I love that. My first distinctive memory of One Direction, for anybody who's my age, this is going to sound like the most 2012 thing ever. There was this Sherlock fan video on Leave Me Alone. So here's my thing. In 2012, I was cringe. I was just not cringe for One Direction. In 2012... there was a Sherlock fan video called Sherlock in Love, which you can look up.
Oh, my God.
It's so embarrassing that I'm probably going to have to link it in the description just so you can judge me. But it was like Sherlock as like a romantic comedy. And they had like, I thought the editing was so good at the time. And it was, it was something. But it was like, meet Sherlock, meet John. And they had like all the little whooshy sounds. And then the background song was What Makes You Beautiful. That was the first time I'm pretty sure that I heard it. And so, yeah, that was my exposure to One Direction. It was through other cringe. So,
wow,
here great. I am. Do you have any other associations with One Direction after that from back, like, when they were active?
Honestly, not really. I do remember I watched their episode of iCarly. I watched iCarly at the time when it aired. So I remember watching their episode of iCarly. But that's really it. Like, I was into boy bands right before One Direction was a thing. And then for some reason, I just was not. Like maybe a year before they hit the charts. So no, I was not into One Direction. I didn't really have any associations with them at the time. I just saw that one episode of iCarly. It did not make me seek them out. And then I heard other One Direction songs, like I heard Story of My Life on the radio, but I didn't know it was them. I don't think I put that together. I didn't think about it that much. I was just like, oh, One Direction. I knew that they existed, but I didn't really think about them at all, if I'm being honest. Mm-hmm. What about you?
I don't know. It's so funny because like I have been an adult who's been like engaging with pop music since the beginning of the band. I was when they debuted on the charts, I would have been 18. So it has been interesting just kind of listening to these songs and realizing, oh, I remember that from there. Oh, I remember that from there. Oh, I remember that from there. Especially because, like, I'm so dorky. I did like event planning in college, and we used to have like the radio playing at these events. So I heard a mm-hmm. lot of One Direction songs, and it must have been like 2013, that mm-hmm. era. And it was like 2013 to 2014. So when I listened to that music of, I think probably like what the Midnight Memories and Four music, especially, there's stuff from there that I probably heard like 100 times because I was doing events stuff in college. Mm. And so I have like memories in that way.
Midnight memories, would you say?
Oh, midnight memories. No, we did not go to midnight. Oh, God. Yeah. And I definitely remember like hearing reviews of their music from like music critics and stuff on YouTube. But I didn't have like a relationship with the band. I had a friend who was a Harry before I was, when he was still in the band. Harrys who were Harrys, like when he was in Direction, are like braver than US Marines.
When he was in One Direction.
Yeah. Like Harrys who like were only or like mostly there for him. Oh my God. So brave.
It's true.
It's true. You're heroes. So how did your relationship to One Direction change when you became a fan of Harry?
Yeah, so I became a fan of Harry around when Lights Up came out. And Harry I was aware of as a celebrity separate from One Direction. So before I became a fan of him, I was like aware of him in the ether, you know? And I think I was a fan of Zayn, right? Like I'd heard, well, not a fan. I'd heard of Zayn, right? I liked right. Pillow Talk a lot. But so I was aware of them, but like not really anybody else. I didn't really have any associations with the band except, you know, watching the iCarly episode and hearing What Makes You Beautiful. And so, yeah, so I became a fan of Harry, and it actually took me a while to like learn anything about One Direction. I was kind of resistant to it, I guess, initially. I think maybe just because like, yeah, I don't know. It was very clear to me from, you know, watching Lights Up. I was like very keyed into like Lights Up and then some of the other stuff that he was doing. And, you know, when he's on SNL, he makes jokes about One Direction. It's very much like he doesn't shy away from it. It's a part of his image. And like everybody knows that that's something that he did in the past. But I didn't feel an urgency to seek it out. I didn't feel an urgency to like really explore it. I think, you know, as time went on, as months went by, you kind of inevitably soak up some stuff. So like once I got started getting more into like the online Harry Styles fandom per se, you kind of just inevitably get exposed to it because so many of really, really devoted online Harry fans were a part of the One Direction fandom. So there's like a lot of history there. There's a lot of conversation there. A lot of time is spent discussing One Direction, even if that's not something that that wasn't something that I was seeking out at the time. So you kind of just get exposed to it by virtue of being a fan of Harry in the online space, right? It's very hard to ignore. So that's kind of how it happened, right? I kind of was resentfully forced to have One Direction opinions because I was just a fan of Harry Styles on the internet and everybody was talking about these other people that I didn't know anything about. And so you have to kind of learn about them and you kind of, by virtue of their fans having opinions on Harry, and you kind of just, you know, you end up with opinions about stuff that I don't think otherwise would have happened. So I described a little bit in last week's episode how I've kind of become a fan of Zayn over the past month or so and how that's really cool, that I really appreciate that becoming a fan of Harry has exposed me to other members of One Direction because some of their music I really like. And then at the same time, you know, I care way more about One Direction than I ever thought I would. And I feel kind of not bad about it, but I don't feel great about it either. I feel pretty neutral about it. It's kind of like, you know, just part and parcel of the Harry Styles fandom, really, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, I'm sure that it always will be. It was a chunk of his career. It wasn't like an insignificant portion of his career, even though, you know, we are not directioners. Mm-hmm. When I first became a fan of Harry, there wasn't a lot of Harry content. So I just, I kind of started listening to One Direction music. After I heard Fine Line, I made a playlist of all the One Direction songs, and I was like doing a lot of work that I just needed anything to listen to with. Mm-hmm. And One Direction is great if you just need something, you know? it's got that one thing, you know?
Oh, God.
So that definitely happened. And then I ended up learning about, like, the deal of the other people in the band, kind of just because I would get bored and I would search up like what the old One Direction drama was. Mm-hmm. So I would read their, they have like these fan wikis. And so some afternoons I would just go and like, I would click to the controversy section and just, and just read that.
You're such a chaotic good. And it's so consistent. And I appreciate how consistent it is.
Yeah, I that was just like how I lived. And I would, on YouTube, you know, I would watch Harry Styles videos. Like, shout out to Swift Styles. That's her name, right? Swift Styles, too. She's great. And so sometimes she had like One Direction videos, and she's one of the people who doesn't post conspiracy stuff on her channel. So she's amazing.
Rare for One Direction compilations. So shout out to that person.
Shout out to her. She's amazing. And so you kind of learn some stuff through both osmosis and then like curiosity. Like if I see something, I would like, you know, follow that down the rabbit hole. So I ended up listening to a lot of like, you know, One Direction's related music that way too. Because Spotify, of course, like once you start listening to Harry, it's like, do you also want to listen to all of Niall Horan's music? And it's like, what? I mean, maybe. So
yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I got to say, I never like, because I think maybe I sounded a little bit too negative before. I have no, you know. It's been fun, honestly, to be exposed to all these different things. And you need content in a fandom. And there's so much One Direction content. And there's a lot of One Direction drama. And that can be fun, too. Like, I find the intrigue of One Direction to be very interesting. I find the history of the band to be interesting. I find exploring the relationships between the members to be very interesting. So that is something that's, you know, curiosity led me down that I do appreciate. But I never really listened to the music, interestingly enough. So I had opinions about everybody in it, but I didn't really listen to the music itself, you know.
Yeah. And I had listened to before, we'll talk about this in a little bit, but before this week, so Kia hardly listened to anything. And I had listened to all of it. So that's definitely where our perspective of this reviewing is coming from, too, which is that I had to pick apart stuff that I was listening to for around a year. And he picked apart stuff that he had just listened to.
I listened to so much One Direction this week. Like, I gave Simon Cowell, I don't know really how the One Direction financial structure works, so approach this joke with a grain of salt. But I gave Simon Cowell so many of my streaming dollars this week, like, it's actually crazy. Just because I wanted to have well-developed opinions, right? You can't listen to five albums and actually have coherent opinions on them if you listen to it once or twice. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Listeners, the story of this episode is funny because we said, I think it was a week and a half ago, he had started falling down the One Direction rabbit hole and we weren't quite sure what we wanted to do for this week. And we were like, well, maybe we should just talk about One Direction because that seems to be kind of where your brain is. After listening to Zayn's album, you're visiting some of this stuff. And then we were like, how hard could this be? How hard?
I wanted on record that I knew it was going to be hard. And I was like, I'm going to need months to prep for this. Like, we're going to do a two-parter. And Gray was like, you know, we can do it. We can do it this week. It'll be fine. And yeah, I do think it's going to be fine, but it was a lot of work. I was, you know, it's fun though. I didn't mind doing it, but it was a lot.
It was definitely fun, but we kept pushing it off day to day to day because we would be like, are we ready yet? And we'd be like, actually, no, I need to listen to that again.
Yeah, I feel like I was procrastinating. I was working right up until we started recording this, basically listening to the music, but yeah, it was a fun time, and I'll kind of explain, I guess, my journey of this week a little bit later. I guess I kind of want to get into, you know, our thoughts on One Direction's music overall. But first, I'll say, like, this might be kind of a long episode. Who knows how long it's going to be? But let me give our listeners a little bit of a game plan so they know where this is headed and what they can expect from this episode. So we're going to kind of give our overall thoughts on One Direction's music. We're going to kind of give mini reviews of all the One Direction albums. And then we're going to do a fun segment where we give our quick opinions on every single One Direction music video. And then we're going to go a little bit more in depth into all the songs that Harry specifically wrote for One Direction. And yeah, then we're going to talk a little bit about our feelings about Harry's relationship to One Direction and what we kind of hope One Direction's relationship with Harry and, you know, his place in celebrity, like, will continue to be going forward or not, or, you know, all that good stuff. So that's kind of the game plan.
All right. So, Key, what are your overall thoughts about One Direction's music?
Yeah, so I think the best way for me to do this would be to kind of give you the story of my life of this past week. I didn't even plan that. That just came out. I'm going to give you the story of this past week in my life and what kind of discovering this music has been for me. Basically, I'll say first, too, before we start it, I want to approach this discussion seriously, right? There's like kind of two different schools of thought on how we can approach this. And I think it's interesting to kind of, you know, describe what they both are. So there's like, okay, One Direction was trying to do a specific thing. And did it always achieve what it was trying to do? And then there's like objectively how good we think certain things are when we approach it with a critical eye. And I think mm-hmm. those two things can be different. And so we're kind of going to be juggling those questions throughout this episode. But yeah, so some people want One Direction to get back together, you know, and us as Harry Styles fans, you know, fans of his solo career, fans of his solo music are going to feel a certain type of way about that. And we'll get into that maybe in a little bit more depth towards the end of this episode. But I think wanting the band to get back together in some sort of fashion kind of invites comparison from 1D's music to their current solo music. And so that's kind of the perspective that I came at this music with. Is would I want to hear more of this in comparison to what the members are making now? So that was kind of where I initially approached it. So I started out listening to One Direction's last three albums. And I have to say, they really exhausted me. It was like my first take on them. People were like, the last three are better. Like, and I just took them at their word. And I was like, okay. And I just listened to the last three. And I was like, this is so tiring. It's so frustrating in so many ways. And that is really how I felt on it. Now, Directioners, hear me out, okay? Because there's going to be a progression throughout this little story that I'm telling here. But that's where I started out. And here's some thoughts that I have as to why that is, okay? That kind of have to do with my initial thoughts on those albums. Is that there is a lot going on in the back of, like, every One Direction song. There's so much instrumentation. There's, like, so much on the production side of things, that it's just a lot, right? The songs don't quite build in like a natural way a lot of the time. Like the first chorus out is just a huge chorus, and then every chorus after that is the same. Like that happens with a lot of their songs, right?
Particularly in the last three albums.
Yes, which were the only ones that I'd heard at that point.
Yeah, so I had said to Key, people keep saying that the last three are the best ones, but the first two, I think, do the best at what they're trying to do. So you have to give them a chance.
Yeah. So I'll get to my opinions on the first two in a second. So that was kind of, you know, I was keeping that in the back of my mind. But I found it so frustrating because I just felt very exhausted by it. You know, there's another thing that I think contributes to that is there's so rarely like a relaxed moment on those last three albums. The vocally, like every single chorus is just belted out. Every song has like a major high point that you're meant to like scream along with. And so, and another thing that majorly contributed to that is that on streaming services, so I have Apple Music, right? I listen to all these albums on Apple Music. All the bonus tracks are just tacked onto the ends of the albums. And I didn't look up beforehand what songs were bonus tracks. So that means that like every album is like 18 to 20 songs, right? Which is way too many songs. So I was listening to this and I was listening to like 18 songs on an album without the knowledge that the last four weren't even on the original album. And it becomes clear, I guess, you know, why I was so exhausted by it, because it's just hit after hit after hit, huge chorus after huge chorus after huge chorus, huge vocal after huge vocal. That's really what those last three albums are to me. And I just felt really exhausted after it. And I was frustrated by it. And I was like, I wanted to like it, right? You go in, like, especially some of the songs are written by Harry, and they're kind of like thought of as quote unquote Harry songs. And I wanted to like them so bad, but I just felt so frustrated by it because I was like, it's almost good. There's like things in there that I could like, but there's just so much going on. I can't focus on any of it. That's kind of how I felt. It's like every slow One Direction song, there's like a huge chorus of violins that comes in like the first verse, you know, or at least by the first chorus. There's like no restraint, right? Like every single slow song I have written down violins by first chorus, because every time it happens, except for the song Little Things, which has other issues, but every slow song is like that. And I was just like, how can people take this? Like, I think part of it, right, I listened to all three albums at once. That's like too much. Like, I don't think you're supposed to listen to it that way.
No,
but I was just very frustrated. And I got cynical and I was like, One Direction, capitalism. I was like, you know, there's these men writing these songs, and like, you know, I was like, I was very cynical about it. So it wasn't a good place. So if you saw my tweets about it at that time that were kind of cynical about One Direction, that's kind of where I was at, because I was kind of exhausted by the music at that point. So here's kind of the turning point of where my opinion started to change. So I watched some live performances of theirs. So I'll point out a couple in particular, right? So there's their performance, The Story of My Life, from the One Direction television special. I watched a bunch of different performances of the song Right Now, just because Zayn's voice is pretty and he sounds really good in that song. the Steal My Girl performance at the BBC Music Awards. I watched some live performances and I was like, wow, these songs like really work live. Like they just do. Like I felt after listening to those albums, I was like, what is appealing about this? Like I just couldn't understand it. And then I watched some of these live performances and they were really good. The audience was totally with everybody and everybody was super jazzed to be there. That isn't the case with all One Direction performances, but the best performances, that's the case. And I started to kind of understand, right? So we've talked before that maybe one of the issues with the builds in One Direction songs is that they recorded them separately, you know, the four of them or the five of them all in separate rooms. They don't understand what the other ones are doing. So everybody just sings it at top volume and everybody just sings it their heart out. And there's no, you can't build the vocals naturally because they're all recording separately. That's not the case when they sing live. So that's not a problem, right? They're all aware of what everybody else is doing. So they approach that song with the understanding. I really started to understand from watching these live performances, like what it was all about and what was appealing about the band. So that kind of totally reframed the way that I thought about the music. So it also made me think, like, the reason why those choruses are so huge and the reason why the music, there's so much going on underneath the music is because that's what it's for. Like, these albums are meant to be played live. They're meant to be played in front of a stadium of tens of thousands of people. Like, that's what they're for. And that, to me, isn't that satisfying of a listening experience on its own, but I understand it, right? I understand the appeal. And I think it'd be sick to be there live and to experience it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of where I was at. So then I listened to the first two albums. So here's my caveat. I was feeling much better about it at that point. I wasn't as exhausted. This is the next day. I kind of understood more what these songs were about and what they were trying to do and what the goal was behind it. And so I was in a much better mood about it, which is probably going to impact how I feel about those albums. But, you know, for the first two albums, I agree with what you said initially, which is that they're fine, but they're accomplishing what they're trying to accomplish, right? Which is different than what those later albums are trying to accomplish. The early One Direction albums are like, they're trying to be fun, catchy pop albums, and that's what they are. The later albums are striving for something different from that. And at least in my opinion, not quite reaching it, which was a part of the reason why they were so frustrating for me to listen to. But yeah, those first two albums, that isn't the case. They're just kind of, they are what they are, for better or for worse at times, which we'll get into in more detail later. So yeah, that's kind of where I fell after I'd listened to the entire One Direction discography. I re-listened to the last three albums and I felt much better about them. Still a lot to criticize, and we'll get into that later, but I felt much less exhausted by them. And the more I listened to it, the more I kind of got used to it, and the easier I found it to listen to, and the more I liked it. That's compounded, of course, by watching more One Direction videos, you know, hearing from the band members, their perspectives, and kind of caring more about some of them, obviously makes you more attached to the music and what they're trying to say. So that's kind of my story of this past week and how my feelings about One Direction's music has changed. So that was like a long rant, but I had a lot to get off my chest because I had so many feelings like just listening to all this music in this past week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So I guess before we move into individual critiques of the album, I have, you know, my main critiques as well. So unlike Key, I have been listening to One Direction for, you know, quite some time, relatively speaking. I had started listening to them in the before times as just sort of background music or walking music or whatever. But I had never really analyzed One Direction's music. I had never really like poked at it or asked questions about it myself. But I hadn't really like done the deep dive into like, okay, so what makes One Direction's music tick? And I definitely had a period this week where I liked One Direction music a lot less than I liked it before. So I feel like there's two different critiques you can make of One Direction. And the thing is that the Take Me Home and Up All Night era, the issues that are inherent to that era are very different than the last three albums.
Yes.
So Midnight Memories and 4 and Made in AM are functionally like a completely separate era. It's very interesting because it's the same band, right?
Mm-hmm.
But essentially behind the scenes, the entire process was totally different. So they really might as well just be two different bands almost.
Yeah, I think that there is a progression there. There's like a midpoint.
Midnight
Memories, I think, is an interesting midpoint
Right.
But yeah, overall, I would agree.
Yeah. So like my critiques of early era and like late era are very different. So my main critiques of early One Direction, I have complex feelings because it does what it's trying to do really, really well, right? Which is be a commercial for the cute boys to come down, come down to the O2 to see One Direction at the O2, buy a Mrs. Harry Styles t-shirt for £35. And so they do that great. They also do like this early 2010s trash really well. Like it, you can't really get much better doing what it's doing, but it's at the same time, it's like so cynical, you know? If you poke at it, you're like, oh God, I don't know how I feel about that.
I think there's like an interesting thing with like where people like to point out the sexism of not taking boy bands seriously because their fan bases are largely young women, which I think is completely legitimate and I think is a really smart critique to make. But at the same time, if you want to talk about One Direction, you got to talk about the older men that were writing the music that One Direction sang to appeal to a very specific audience, which I think is an interesting dynamic. And I think it's one that doesn't, it does not always age the best, and one that, it, you know, doesn't always stand up to scrutiny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I also feel like personally, I do have to acknowledge that as a 28-year-old man of a sort, One Direction songs are really not for me. They were when allegedly when I was a teenage girl at one point. They were probably more for me back then, but I'm not quite the audience now. So whenever I feel, whenever I hear like Liam go, oh my gosh, you know, I couldn't love you more than this. And like, why are you dating him when you could be dating me? I'm like, oh God, this is too high school. I graduated high school 10 years ago. I just can't with this, please.
Yeah, there's absolutely nothing wrong with appealing to teenage girls, but like, right. No, I did have a note written on one of the songs where it was like, Liam said girl like 5 times. And I was like, is this song bad or do I just feel really dysphoric listening to this? Like, it's hard for me to tell.
Right. It's like, oh, are you jealous of me and like my me and my 5 friends all want you so badly, but you're in love with an even hotter guy. I'm like, oh God, this is stressing me out. I'm sweating. this is not a fantasy of mine anymore. I'm too old. Can I just have Zayn like alone? Just like, or, you know, 2 of them is fine, but I just don't need all 5. So I would say that my critiques of late era One Direction are different. The songs are actually about something now sometimes, but the production is way worse.
I think, yeah, it's because of the genre shift, right? It's a hard thing about the genre shift.
Right. The production is way worse. You can tell stuff was recorded on the road or in the case of Made in the AM, especially very separate from one another. And a lot of the songs sound like solos broken up to 5 because, again, a lot of people were like writing, especially once you get to Made in the AM, people were just off writing and then they're like, here you go. You can kind of tell that's how it is. I'm not trying to like, you know, get too into like the drama, but it's, you know, One Direction is broken up. You can tell. And then there's just a general sense. I wrote in the document, very dramatic of me, but there's just a general sense of rotting morale, exhaustion, and overproduction in that. But is it? Am I incorrect?
I think it's probably stronger than what I would say. But when I first listened to those albums and I was feeling really exhausted, I definitely would have agreed with that.
Right. So I will say that this is, you know, we know that they toured a lot and a lot of this stuff, they've been very open about the fact that a lot of it was recorded like in a tricked out van in the back. So I feel like you can kind of tell.
Yeah. It's the reality of it.
So, but I had the distinct sense of listening at home in the middle of the coronavirus pandemic that this was not the setting where I was supposed to be listening to these songs. I remember hearing them, like I said before, at parties or on the radio back in the day. Key was talking earlier about how, you know, They were watching videos of them performing live. These songs are very much for public space. They're for people to be around each other and like have the songs, but also be in public space with the songs. So like when I'm listening to this music and critiquing it, especially like the stadium rock stuff, totally. I can't help but think like, okay, well, a lot of this stuff was supposed to be played live and it just is not anymore. And I still do, having said all of this, think that a lot of the songs slap, but I will be happy after this week to be able to shut off my brain about them again and just like listen to one thing without thinking deeply about anything in it.
Totally. And I think too, there's an interesting swap of perspectives here, right? I think I, and just, you know, for our listeners to know, as we approach kind of the discussions of the albums, like I started out feeling very cynical about One Direction. I really didn't understand what people liked about it. I ended up feeling much more positive about it. Still not my favorite. I don't wish that they would get back together tomorrow, but I felt more positive about it. And Gray kind of had a progression in the opposite direction. So I think that makes for an interesting discussion for sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So now, Key, are you ready to do a quote-unquote brief review of all of the One Direction albums?
Yes. Yeah, so I think why I wanted to get everything, that whole big rant that I just said, the story of my life of the past week, why I wanted to do that is because a lot of those critiques are things that I would be repeating with basically all of these albums, right? So now that most of that's out of the way, I can talk about some other stuff. I might still repeat some of those things, but I'll try to keep it, you know, I'll try to keep it brief, try to not include those things. So for this first One Direction album, my policy is kind of to ignore the lyrics. So assume that the lyrics don't play much of a part in what I'm going to say here, because I find the lyrics cringy a lot of the time, if I'm honest. I think this is a pretty good pop album. Up All Night's a pretty good pop album. It has a lot of catchy songs you can dance to. The songs get stuck in your head. When I was first listening to it, I was humming the songs all day afterwards. They're earworms. That's definitely what they're for. That's definitely what they do. Mm-hmm. The ballads on the album don't play as well for me. With some exceptions, but mostly that's the case. As it goes on, I get over it. There shouldn't be a deluxe version. 14 songs is completely enough. In fact, there should be 10. There should not be 18. Like, that's insane. 10 songs is enough. But if it was 10, like 10 is good. Like 10 is fine. It's a fun, catchy pop album. And that's what it is. Again, cringed at some of their like the classic boy band stuff. I can more easily excuse some of that stuff because they're young and they sound young. And so there's some sound stuff that I can kind of excuse because I'm like, you know, they sound young and that's what they are. And so there's nothing wrong with that. High points for me, What Makes You Beautiful, which I think is a great song. It's a reason that's their big break. Again, am I so hot on the What Makes You Beautiful lyrics? No. But I mean, the lyrics sound nice. The meaning behind them, I don't know, but it's a catchy song. You know, Tell Me a Lie, I really like, actually. I think Zayn sounds amazing on that song. A lot of my initial thoughts were like Zayn's voice right out from the beginning stands out and he's just really good. And yeah, basically those are my thoughts. Yeah, catchy pop album. It's, you know, it is what it is. What about you?
I think Up All Night is a very strong first album for a boy band. It doesn't mean it's good, but it's not, that's not the exact, okay, so like, objective,
we might get
goodness,
slaughtered for this, but you know, that's our opinion.
I'm saying this as somebody who's listened to Up All Night a lot, so don't come for me because I have listened to Up All Night way too much. It's embarrassing. I like Up All Night, but that doesn't mean that Up All Night is good by every standard. So it's a good, strong first album for a boy band, but that kind of means that it's commercial, right? Because like Up All Night is trying to introduce you to the important thing, which is the five, you know, boys. Who are these boys and what are their places in the band? I think that Up All Night is really good at presenting them as unified, but also features their specific voice in different parts of the song. So you get an aspect in all the music videos and stuff of, okay, Harry sings like this. And Liam sings like this. And you get in your little music videos, you get, oh, Nyla's the guitar one, you know? but yeah, I think that a lot of the music, it has this very like, it doesn't, it's kind of, Key and I discussed this a lot this week. It kind of slides out of your brain. Like, it goes in your ear and slides out of your brain.
Some of it, yeah, for sure.
And so I think that, like, I don't think that's necessarily a negative quality. I just don't know if I would, I don't know if I can confidently say that it's, this is good. I feel like this sounds very incoherent, but I have very complicated feelings about this. But I will move on to more of like a critique of how it sounds, which is everything is like, the tune of it is like always an earworm. Like, I do get so much stuff from this album like stuck in my head all the time. So it is a combination of like, it kind of slides out of my brain, and that like all the songs, a lot of them like go into each next song. So sometimes there's like lyrics and I don't know which song it actually slots into, but I do get like little riffs of the songs like stuck in my head, in my head. Like, I can't be no Superman, but for you I'll be superhuman or something. I get that in my head all the time. I agree with Key that there's way too many ballads on this album. I gotta cut that shit out. No, the only good one is Taken. The only good album, or the only good ballad on the album is Taken. What do you feel of that take?
I feel neutral about Taken. I feel neutral about most of the ballads. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm not. It's hard to have like specific opinions having listened to this album a lot this past week, but never before that. Mm-hmm. On those specific songs, but I definitely prefer the bops to the to the slower ones for sure.
Yeah, I guess I've gone on and on about this. So I will just get to my high points. What Makes You Beautiful is a high point for me too. Big nostalgia factor. Shout out to the cowbell. Shout out to the drummer. Up All Night, the song I am so crazy for. Oh my god. The like hyper sugar pop that the early 2010s excelled at. I listened to it. I was like, oh my god, if my prom had just been like 1 year later, this totally would have been at my prom and that would have been so fun. Instead, it was like Raise Your Glass by Pink or whatever. That totally dates me.
I remember that song.
Yeah, that was that played at my senior prom. One Thing, No Thoughts, Head Empty, Just Slaps. What one thing do I have? I don't know. It's nonsense, but it's great.
Yeah, I agree.
Low points, every ballad on this album except Taken is just a nothing song. The high notes are often so squeaky and almost unlistenable. Why did they do that?
Right. Okay, that's our review of Up All Night. I hope some people enjoyed it. I don't know if this is a roast. I don't know if we were positive. It's like hard to gauge. I haven't talked to many One Direction fans about how they feel about this stuff. So hopefully this was enjoyable. Those are our opinions. All right. Take Me Home. I really want to race through these album reviews.
Take Me Home. Go.
One of the main things that emerges for me from Take Me Home is that there's such dire lyrical moments on this album, like worse than the first one, bad enough that I can't ignore them, right? So a lot of the One Direction songs, the lyrics are bad, but I'm like, who cares? Like, this slaps. I don't even know what they're saying. Like, I can just entirely ignore it. And then there are some songs in this album where I'm like, the lyrics demand to be discussed because they're so bad. Like, I could do a dramatic reading of Over Again. It's just hilariously terrible.
Oh my god, it's so bad.
It's so bad. I feel like I cringed a lot listening to this album. I wrote that down a lot. And again, that sounds mean, but like, just listening to it, I was like, this song is like, it's too cheesy, it's too cringy. There's just a lot of cheesy stuff like Summer Love, Last First Kiss. Again, I've heard live versions of these songs that I actually really like, but on the album, they're physically incapable of injecting violins and like really dramatic music into every slow moment that demands to be felt on the album until you just feel nothing. Like, that's what it was to me anyway. I was reminded, especially in songs like I Would, that like a bunch of like older guys wrote these songs for teenagers to sing. So it's like they're singing about high school, but it's like a very caricatured. It's like, I don't know. It is what it is. It's fun. It's whatever. If I was like, you know, it's fine. But I was just reminded listening to it that that's what it was, you know. High points for me, Kiss You, I really like.
Isn't I Would the boyfriend one? Like, he's your boyfriend, L-O-B.
Something like that. Yes, okay. Oh, that's the other thing. Multiple songs on this album, like, spell out words with letters, and I just don't understand why. Like, I don't know what writer's quirk that was, but they do it on Rock Me, too, which I have as one of my low points on this album.
R-O-C-K me.
Actually, yeah, so I'll do the low points first, because two songs on I Would and Rock Me, they spell out words with letters, and I just don't know why that is. It just doesn't work, and I don't like it. Little Things, the lyrics, so cringy. I'll say, like, this is the only song in One Direction's entire discography that has any sort of restraint in the backing track. The only thing behind this song is an acoustic guitar. Literally the only song in their entire discography that you can say that about. So I'll say that I admire Little Things for literally not doing what every other One Direction song does, which is inject 50 instruments in the first chorus. But then that is completely taken away by the fact that the lyrics to Little Things are terrible. One Direction fans know this. Everybody doesn't like the lyrics to Little Things. I'm not saying anything new here. Over again, what the fuck? They sound so British on that song, which I do kind of like. But like the showers that are British is just in the Hall of Fame for the worst lyrics literally of all time. High points for me, Kiss You, Come On, Come On. Both those songs I really like. Kiss You actually is the tempo that it should be. So many One Direction songs, I'm like, this is like way too fast and it's like running away with itself. Kiss You, I don't feel that way about. Come On, Come On is more restrained than a lot of other One Direction songs are. Zayn's parts sound great. Those are my thoughts. That kind of sounds like a roast. Mm-hmm. I feel less roasty about it than maybe I just said, but there's just so much. The lyrics are so cringy and you can't ignore it like you put on the first album.
Okay, I'll do my little fast take. Okay, so I think Take Me Home might be a more consistent album musically than Up All Night, but I like it less. It's more consistently good, but it has fewer standout tunes and it has way lower lows than Up All Night. Mm. My favorite song on this album is Kiss You, which is really emblematic of the problems with this album, in that musically it's great, but then it just slaps you with things like, I just want to show you out to all my friends, making them drool down their chinny chin chins. What? No.
I think that's kind of cute.
No, it's not.
I hate it.
I'm canceling
you. For this album, that lyric's not bad at all.
That's the problem. That's the problem with the album. It's like a good lyric for this album. Oh my gosh. But I do love Kiss You. If it's not obvious yet, I love the manicky, like vacuous sound of the early 2010s. Kiss to the Obama administration. I was so much happier then. politically anyway. But like, man, very few people were doing this thing better than One Direction was doing it, for better or for worse. So another thing, just to counter what Key was saying, I actually like Rock Me and I Would doing the spelling thing. I just think it's really funny when they say L-O-V-E and R-O-C-K-me. I just think
that's fine. It's personal preference. I don't care for it.
I just think it's hilarious. It's like when Taylor Swift goes, spelling is fun. Actually, yeah, no, that's not.
I don't like that.
No, I don't like that because like when Taylor Swift does it, like she's like pointing it out. She's like, spelling is fun. No, you have to just like do it and you have to like lean into it. Like they're not doing it with any irony and I have to appreciate that. In terms of like low points, so I'm pretty sure this album is just like sort of a grave where bad lyrics go to die. Like specifically Ed Sheeran's bad lyrics, because like a number of the songs on this album are written by Ed Sheeran and it's like he wrote songs that were like bad and he was like, oh, well, fuck, man. Like,
said, here's my trash.
He said, should I throw this away? And One Direction was like, oh, we need another song. Can we have it? And he's like, oh, it's not good. And they're like, I don't care. Little Things is by far the worst One Direction song. It lowers the stock of the entire album.
And they did it so often. It was a single.
Oh, my God. I'm pretty sure every queer baiting think piece is karma for Harry saying, you still love to squeeze into your jeans.
Don't blame him for that. That's not his fault. Blame Ed Sheeran.
He was friends with Ed Sheeran at the time. He was close. He said in the behind the scenes of the Little Things music video, Little Things is my favorite One Direction song.
He had to say that. He couldn't have been negative. He was like 17 years old. I don't know. One Direction fans don't come for me. He's probably 19. I don't know. I don't follow it closely.
Harry, we love you and you don't sing this anymore. And I love that for you. But I don't love that you sang this. It's so bad. I'm pretty sure it's the love child of Ed Sheeran and Satan. Again, what the fuck was up with Over Again? They really just sang that? Like, I know that we've both gone off about it, but I watched a performance of like Louis, he sings it, but he like leans into it. He doesn't he doesn't pull away from like showers that are British or like whatever that line is. He like pushes it.
So he enunciates it so
he
much.
He enunciates it so you
notice.
I have
to admire it if I'm honest.
It is admirable. So I guess that's my review. Take me home. Yeah.
All right. On to Midnight Memories.
Midnight Memories.
So I wrote down a couple of times that songs of this album sound like High School Musical songs. And that's like not even a critique. Like I love High School Musical. Midnight Memories being one, it just sounds so much to me like a song like the cool kids thing sing to distract Gabrielle from doing her homework. And once I thought about it that way, I kind of loved it. But I will say, so just generally musically, like now that the voices of the One Direction members are more distinct because of, you know, vocal development, growth in their own vocal abilities, and also because of the endeavor to change genres, they're no longer applying the same vocal effects. So some of them start to really stick out on this album in not a great way. So there are multiple moments in songs that I noted where somebody, I'm not going to like name any names, but just a couple moments on the album where somebody sings and I'm like, oh no, that it just doesn't match with the song at all. The tone that they're doing doesn't match with what anybody else is doing. So that's something that stuck out on me on this album that I didn't really notice in the other albums because there's like a strong vocal effect applied to all their voices. Mm-hmm. Plus, so in that respect, it kind of sounds like Hot Potato sometimes. It's like being passed from person to person. And that's kind of the nature of One Direction, but I don't love that about it. I'll say I had this critique for the last album sort of as well, but especially on this album, a lot of the songs of this album feel way too fast. Like I was like, the song is just running away from itself. And I was like watching that four to the floor drum beat where it's like four beats to the bar, every single beat in the measure, the drum is just hammering. And I just like had a headache. I was like, that happened multiple times in this album. A lot of the songs end kind of strangely. Like I think I remember thinking that with Right Now, that it was just like not a natural ending of a song. But I will say that a couple songs this album I do really like. Story of My Life is off of this album, which I like. I don't like love it. I still have some critiques of that song, but it's a good single choice. I love hearing the end part live with Zayn. That part always sounds super, super good. Best Song Ever is just really hype. It's just fun. And then I love Zayn's solo in Right Now. I wish there was restraint on the production, as always. It's always my thing with all One Direction songs. But I've listened to a bunch of live performances of Right Now, and I just really enjoy Zayn's vocals on that song. And then I'll shout out briefly to Zayn and Harry's voices together at the end of the song Something Great. The song itself is not one of my favorites on the album, but there's like a specific moment in that song where the two of their voices sound so good together. And so I wanted to shout that out as a high point. A couple brief songs that I'll shout out as a low point. Don't Forget Where You Belong, which has the most iconic One Direction lyric of all time. If you ever feel alone, don't. Which in context actually isn't that bad. Like it's way better than the last album's low points, but I just love that because I find it so funny. Through the Dark is one of those songs where it just feels like it's running away with itself to me. There's just too much going on in that song. It's probably super fun live, but just hearing it, you know, as it was, I didn't love it. And Little White Lies, I didn't really like either. So those are my quick Midnight Memories thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Okay, my Midnight Memories thoughts. Midnight Memories is the worst One Direction album.
Wow, huge take.
A take that is lukewarm, but true.
A lot of people disagree with you, I feel like.
Oh, well, I've seen my take before. But I rate it as a scale as bad as the absence of good. Where Midnight Memories, I think the most that can be said about it is it doesn't really know what it is, but it wants you to think you know what it is. It's very juvenile that way. The production on Midnight Memories is not as good as the production on Up All Night and Take Me Home, which produces a far less cohesive sound. But on the other hand, the lyrics are not as bad as Take Me Home, but I wouldn't rate them as good. More as unmemorable. I started to just go off in this document. What is this album? It has such a slippery quality in that it enters my brain and falls right out. I realize I said that about some of the earlier songs too, but this one has
way more.
This is
especially true.
This one is especially true because when I re-listen to Up All Night and Take Me Home, the slippery quality is different in that some of the songs, I find them interchangeable with some of the other songs, but I still feel that very clearly that they belong in those albums. Midnight Memories, I'll listen through and then I can't remember what just happened. It's a bit like the experience of watching the Transformers movies, where like you watch them and you can't remember what happened in the Transformers movies. Mm-hmm. But I feel like it's like this overproduction of it, right? Like, or like yeah. this
There's just so much going on.
There's so much. Yeah, there's so much going on. It's very much, it's like, yeah, it is why, like, you can't remember what happens in Transformers movies. There's so much going on all over everywhere. So it really just does have, like, a very slippery quality to it. Key, don't slander High School Musical like that. Midnight Memories is a knockoff of a High School Musical song. It's a Middle School Musical. High Point is definitely best song ever. Very, very catchy and huge nostalgia factor for me. Best song ever is structurally, lyrically, sonically, and spiritually better than anything else on the first three albums.
Wow.
Its percussion is maybe mixed a bit to the front, but I remember hearing this in public a lot. And in public space, it definitely plays very different. Mm. It just needs to be kind of like mixed like that for radio play. I really like Story of My Life too. It just reminds me of like a different era of music. I don't think it's that good, but I feel fondness for it. Key is Going to Kill Me. I like Through the Dark.
It's fine. I don't feel strongly enough about any of these songs to have big takes here.
Oh, but Key.
Oh, wait, I lied.
This one. A Low Point is definitely You and I. There's just so many good songs called You and I. And before I get into this, I will say that one of my favorite songs in the world is Lady Gaga's You and I. And so I'm always going to compare any song called You and I to that one. Because, like, of course.
I'll say You and I don't love it. Like, I'm not going to defend it to the death. Because it has, it's not one of my high points in the album either. It has a lot of the issues that I have with all of One Direction's music. But Zayn's solo in that song is just so nice. And I just love listening to his high falsetto. That it just, all the problems melt away. And I'm like, how could it be your low point when it just has that beautiful vocal moment from Zayn?
Yeah, it doesn't save it. Sorry, Zayn, baby. But yeah, the lowest point on this album is definitely If You Ever Feel Alone, Don't.
That's like so funny. Like it's almost good. Like I just love that so much. It's just the best bad lyric. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so good. All right, shall we move on to four?
Yeah, we'll move on to four.
All right. So I will get into my overall thoughts on One Direction's album four. I think there are great singles on this album. Finally, we're getting to the point where I actually really like without reservations, a few of the songs. So before it's like, you know, I'm like, oh, it's fun, but it's not, you know, I don't know if I would say it's like really good. Although I, you know, here and there, you know, but there are actual songs on four that I properly think are good songs. So some of those songs stand out. The same problems are still obvious with this album where there's just too much going on in the background of songs. Songs don't build naturally. You know, I've said it a million times. You know how I feel this way. The song endings are better and more natural on this album. The songs are finally starting to feel like they're actually written by people. you know, some of the, not all of them, but some of the songs on this album, I'm like, wow, somebody actually wrote this and they actually like said something. So that's cool. And those are kind of my overall thoughts. High points for me. Steal My Girl. Steal My Girl is so fucking hype. What are they saying in the song? I have no fucking idea. I don't care. It bangs. Great chorus for live performances. I've watched a bunch of live performances of this and they're all good. The performance at the BBC Music Awards is lit. Okay? It's so fun to dance to. Whenever I play this, I dance around my house. Finally, a song is the right tempo. This song is like a hype single, but it's like it takes its time. It's not banging you over the head with it with a beat per, with four beats per measure super quick. If you can't move to the chorus of the song, I'm sorry. I don't know what's wrong with you. Zayn's part at the end of the song is so hype. Yeah. I don't even know if this is a popular take. I feel like I don't know. I just think Steal My Girl is great. Night Changes, I think, is really good. Again, I wish the production was a little bit more restrained, but it is the tempo it needs to be at. They didn't rush this song. There's more restraint than the vast majority of other One Direction songs. I've forever loved the key change in Night Changes. I think Liam always does that really well. Live, there's a particular acoustic performance of Night Changes where Liam does the key change. I think it just sounds so beautiful. It doesn't go too hard. Low points, two songs that have the exact same problem for me, which are Spaces and Clouds. Spaces, the lyrics really intrigue me because I like band drama and intrigue. So the lyrics to that song I actually think are good. Zayn sounds great in the pre-chorus, but oh my God, the chorus is way too big. The first chorus comes in and there's like 800 million backing vocals. Like it's like I'm being banged over the head with this song when it's happening. Clouds, I feel very similarly. Maybe it was great live. I haven't watched live performances, but honestly, I was exhausted by it. Like it's just full volume the whole time, full production the whole time. I listen to that song and I'm like, what's going on? I like can't think. It's like so much at once. So those are my low points on the album.
Okay. So my takes on four. So I think I really like four. I think its pacing is really good. So it's a marked improvement on Midnight Memories for me. It just feels a lot more substantive and less juvenile. Like I actually feel like maybe stuff matters to people on this album. It may be One Direction's best album, question mark.
I feel like that's the popular take. Yeah. I don't know if I have an opinion on what I think their best is, but a lot of people say that it's this one.
I think it's this one. Yeah. It may be its best like rock influenced album. I also don't hate anything on this album. Like nothing makes a little part of me inside shrivel up and die. Like some
the lyrics are way better.
The lyrics are way better. And quite a few things make me wish that I was like dancing outside to it. Mm-hmm. I would say that the songwriting quality on four is similar to the songwriting quality on Made in the AM, but four is much better album because it simply feels a lot more cohesive. So good songs that vibe. Girl Almighty. I love the riff of Let's Have Another Toast for the Girl Almighty. Oh my God. Yes, raise a glass. It's so good. The lyrics in that song are, I mean, honestly, some of the low points on the album, like the line about the ambulances, they sing it twice. Why did they sing it twice? They really said that, no, we're going to sing this. And just to make sure that you don't forget it, we're going to do it again. But I mean, like, I find a certain charm to that, that it has the high and the low points really in the same song. But oh my gosh, I still love the weird ambulance song. Like, yes, let's have another toast to the Girl Almighty. Love it. Night Changes. I think the lyrics to this are like actually really beautiful and meaningful. I love it. It kind of lets the singers breathe. I think it might be One Direction's best slow song, question mark. Like Key, I have mixed feelings about Stockholm Syndrome, and we'll talk about it a little bit later, but I think it's a good song at its core that just could have been a lot better. Fool's Gold really tickles me. It's a genuinely good metaphor for a relationship that you just keep going back to, even though it makes you kind of feel like shit. Possibly some of the best lyrics on any One Direction song, and the instrumentation is pretty restrained. More low points. There's too much going on in Illusion. And
There's a lot.
Yeah, too much. And I hate how No Control opens with a shout. I just really don't like that. Okay, so Made in the AM. We made it here.
Yes, we did make it here. I will say, I can't decide. Like, it's hard for me to decide if I do think 4 is better than Made in the AM. On both of those albums, there are two songs that I just unabashedly really like. And I think they're those are the only two albums that I can say that about. So in Made in the AM, it is Drag Me Down and Perfect, both of which I think are just really good pop songs. And I think you'll notice that my preference is for One Direction's poppier type music here. I think because I have so many issues with the instrumentation, which is just not as much of a problem on a pop influenced song. So there are pretty much no chilled out moments on this album and really on any of the One Direction albums. So they all have to have a big moment somewhere. Mm-hmm. And that's the case on this album too. And I point that out because I think one of them said in the Made in the AM behind Made in the AM or whatever that YouTube series was, one of them was like, we made this album knowing that we weren't going to tour it. So we wrote it differently. And I'm kind of like, but where though? Because I don't like this. Like so many of the same problems that I have are the case here. I actually think a couple of songs this album, the closer and the opener in particular, they're trying to mimic that live experience. There's like a bunch of vocals in the back that sound like fans singing on both the closer and the opener. So I'm kind of like, I don't understand. I think maybe Harry said that, and he said that, and I was like, I don't know about that.
Well, he didn't write either of those songs. So.
That's true. Maybe on his songs that's the case. So I'll say, oh yeah. So part of the reason, right, that all these songs have to have these big moments is because they all are going off and they're writing their own separate songs and they're all putting them together on one album. So each of the different One Direction members, right, they all want to have a banger. They all want to have their own moment, right? Mm-hmm. So that means that there can't just be like a chill song that's like fine, that like relaxes you and is like, you know, a solid moment on the album. Even the slow songs, they go off and there's like a huge chorus with a really belty vocal with like 10 violins playing. You know what I mean? And so that, again, is tiring for me on this album. I've said it before, I'm repeating myself, but it's true. The songs are more interesting on this album. Again, you can tell the actual people wrote them. I think you can kind of tell who wrote them. I think a lot of them have developed their kind of signature song writing styles at this point. So I find that interesting. And you can tell that some of them aren't just written based on what the writers thought people would like. So some of those early One Direction albums, right, there's these guys who are like, okay, what do we think this demographic is going to want? That's not the case on this album. So in that way, artistically, I respect it more. But yeah, the highlights for me are all the fun bops. So Drag Me Down, always like this song. The verse builds on this song. The chorus grooves. The tempo is perfect for it. I don't listen that much to the lyrics. Very similar to Steal My Girl from Me, where I'm just like, this is just a bop. Fun to dance to. Really good pop song. Harry kills it on the solo at the end. Perfect, we'll discuss later. It's one of my favorite One Direction songs. And I'll shout out Never Enough, too, for a non-Harry song. I really like that song. It kind of bangs. The horns on it are good. The backing doo-wop stuff is fun. It's like a original, like nothing, no other One Direction song sounds like this, which is fun. Yeah, low points, I would say maybe End of the Day. I said to Gray when I first listened to the song that they wrote two songs, the verse of the song and the chorus of the song. Mm-hmm. They just shoved those two together. And they just don't match at all. But I don't hate it. I don't hate any of the songs on this album. I just wish, like, listening to this, I'm like, give me a song that's just restrained and just lets me relax and just doesn't go so hard for each time. That's really what I want. But I don't, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so my takes on Made in the AM. Made in the AM and 4 are very similar albums, but 4 is better to me because it still feels like a One Direction album, whereas Made in the AM feels like he was saying like an album made by 4 people that somebody had to kind of patch together. This is why I have offensively called it Harry Styles 0.5. songwriting is about the maturity level of 4, and I will say that there are higher highs, and by that I mostly mean Olivia. There is no Olivia of 4, which is problematic of 4 to not have an Olivia on it. You can start to feel Harry come into his own, particularly on Made in the AM. I'm not crazy about most of his songs written before then. Like, they're fine. But I do feel like the songs on Made in the AM, like, the core of them that he wrote, they really feel like Harry songs. That they really feel like this is the kind of music that Harry makes, which I think is cool. I don't always love everything that was done to them in production, but I do think that his songwriting definitely blossomed.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to put it.
Yeah. So good songs that vibe. Drag Me Down. I still remember this from like this came out when I was in college and I still remember it. I didn't know it was a One Direction song. It goes really hard and I like it. If I Could Fly, Harry's writing on that one is amazing. Probably matched with Night Changes for One Direction's best slow song. I Feel the Longing very hard. It's just, yeah.
Yeah, we'll talk about it more later.
Yeah, Olivia. Could have been this generation's Penny Lane, but they had to take the instrumentation off. We recorded at Abbey Road. I hated it. Justice for Olivia. I love Olivia. Whatever. Long Way Down is mostly a boring song, but Harry is so amazing on the chorus that he sings on. There's just a way that he sings, it's a long way down. I don't know. It's just great. I know it's just a random moment to love, but I love it anyway. Low points. So the thing about End of the Day, like Q was saying earlier, the chorus and verses are good separately, but they are not supposed to be with each other. It's so jarring and they just like keep pushing through it. Like, what the fuck is that song? Like,
it's strange to listen to.
Like, they put stomps in it. Like, we won't notice that they don't fit together.
Oh, yeah. Then what connects them?
Right. What connects them?
Like,
right. Right.
Like, that doesn't make it better.
It doesn't. It's genuinely a mess. And then also, everything else about Long Way Down, except for Harry's riff on it, is the worst. It's trash. Not a good song.
Wow, strong opinion.
It's bad. Yeah, so that's my takes on One Direction's albums. How are you feeling, Key?
I'm feeling pretty good. We got through those hopefully quickly.
Oh my gosh.
For reviews of all of One Direction's albums, we got through it pretty quick. I feel like we were pretty harsh. Whether you found that roast to be very upsetting or you found it to be extremely amusing, I hope that you can accept our opinions. I don't hate One Direction's music. I just, like we said at the top of the show, like, we're evaluating this with the knowledge of the music that they would go on to make, thinking, mm-hmm. like, would we want more of this music? And I think that's kind of the critical lens that we're approaching this with. And so that's kind of why we're coming out the gate here on this and approaching it critically and going through these songs and taking notes on it. Like, that's not the way you're meant to be listening to it, but of course you're going to notice these things. You know what I mean?
And I think that it's worth noting as well that, you know, there have been some harsh things that I've said, but I'm still going to be listening to One Direction's music. We'll talk in a little bit about, like, whether or not I want more of it. But in terms of, like, what we have already, I am happy that I have this music in the world. I will still listen to Up All Night. It will still be my trash. I'm actually very excited now that this week is over that I'm not going to have to think about Up All Night or Take Me Home anymore, because I just don't want to think about them. I like that they vibe. I like that they bop. But then as soon as I poke at them, I'm like, oh, I don't like myself for liking this. you know?
I'll say I might listen to Steal My Girl. I'll probably listen to Perfect a little bit or Drag Me Down. But I didn't listen to One Direction before this, and I probably mm-hmm. won't listen to them more. But that's fine. If you love it, that's great for you, and I'm happy that you have this music. But that's how we feel about it. Those are our
thoughts.
Yeah, those are our hopefully brief. We'll see in the edit how brief they are. We'll reviews see. Of all the One Direction albums.
Yeah, we'll see.
All right, so next up, we're going to have another speed round. So a big part of my experience of One Direction, so one of the first things I did, actually, I didn't say this off the top of the show, was when I kind of, you know, when there was no Harry content and I got a little bit bored, like pretty early into me being a Harry fan. I mean, I say that, it was a few months in probably. I just watched all the One Direction music videos. It's just a very fun thing to do, to just watch all the One Direction music videos in order. Like, some of them are good, some of them are not good, but it's just very fun. So yeah, I thought it was an important thing to kind of acknowledge in this episode.
Key, I think the first time that we both saw all of them, we were new Twitter friends, weren't we? We were like,
yeah, I think so.
Messaging back and forth.
Yeah, I think we actually watched them at the same time and discussed them together, which was really fun. I highly recommend it. I'm sure everybody listening to this has already done that, because, like, we're new fans. A lot of people aren't. Mm-hmm. But again, we'll get into all of our opinions on this in a second. But regardless, mm-hmm. the music videos are very fun to just watch and just experience the time of it all. The views that they have on them are insane. I guess people just don't watch music videos anymore, because, like, every One Direction music video has, like, hundreds of millions to a billion views for What Makes Me Beautiful, and that just, like, is mind-blowing to me.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's funny when you go down the comments, One Direction really must, like, exploded on TikTok or something, because, like, the first comment is always like, who's still here in 2020?
Yeah, I think that's kind of inevitable, but yeah, for sure it is, and everybody returns to it, and we've noticed this too on social media. Yeah. That quarantine, I think, has been a big booster of One Direction's fan base.
Yeah.
And TikTok as well, but
I assume that anything I don't understand where people are coming from, I just assume it's all coming from TikTok, because I don't understand TikTok. So if I can't figure out the source of something, I'm just like, well, it must be on TikTok, because I don't
probably a safe assumption.
Yeah, it's usually a safe assumption, because then I'll find out, like, 2 weeks later, oh, somebody's doing this shit on TikTok, and I'm like, okay, well, I don't understand TikTok very well, so I'm assuming that lots of the One Direction fans are coming from TikTok.
That's probably a smart assumption, but TikTok is for short content. So we're going to do little mini short TikToks, except just audio. So not really TikToks at all right now, of all of the One Direction music videos. So
yes. We
are going to do our quick takes. One Direction music video speed round is what I'm going to call this. We're going to give us 15 seconds on the clock. We'll switch off and we'll give quickly our opinions, as many opinions as we can say about the One Direction music videos in 15 seconds. So that is the central conceit of the segment.
Yeah.
Good luck. And we're going to start our clocks. All right. Who's going to go first?
You can go first. I just got to get the timer. Okay. So the first video is What Makes You Beautiful. Are you ready? Are you set? Yep. Go.
All right. Why are they wearing baggy khaki pants. It's terrible. They're wet. It's their worst look of all time. Harry does this thing with his hand that he does for almost all of One Direction's music videos where he just points down. And then when they sing the chorus, he just points downward with his hand, which I find endearing, but also it's weird. All right. So Gray, now it's your turn. You have 15 seconds on the clock. Give me all your takes on the What Makes You Beautiful video in 3, 2, 1, go.
I just keep thinking of that video, You're Insecure, You're Insecure. People remember this was the Watermelon Sugar Beach. Baby's Harry's hair, what a look. His version of dancing is just sort of throwing his body forward to his arms to the side. There's a Key of Awesome video of this that was so iconic that I always think to.
All right, done. 15 seconds. You got to pick your fave comments.
I did. Okay. So, yes. All right. So is this going to be funny to anybody? Or like?
It's funny to me.
Okay. All right. Okay. Good.
I hope people find this entertaining, you guys. I like the idea of a One Direction speed round. Let us know what you think.
Okay. So now we kind of have a sense of like how this goes. Okay. So 3, 2, 1. Gotta be you.
Already so funny, just from the second shot of the video. The acting Liam is doing, he looks so sad this whole video. Harry's outfit is cute. His scarf looks great. Those baggy khakis, again, their signature look is terrible. What is the concept of this video? It just keeps cutting to Niall. He just sits there and looks dramatically. Why do they keep cutting to Niall looking at nothing?
Time.
I got everything I wanted to say
you did,
in there.
You did,
that's
you did. Okay,
all my
okay.
takes on the Gotta Be You video.
Okay. All right.
Okay. 3, 2, 1. Go.
Harry's oversized scarf. The music video is weirdly empty, like COVID. Niall with his guitar is the guitar guy. Harry doing the flapping his hands for the most. The truth is that this era, if you were unfamiliar with Harry and Liam, they were difficult to tell apart. And they're at a bonfire again. Why are there so many bonfires?
Okay, done. There were a lot of bonfires.
Okay.
I love this.
Me too. It's great. All right. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. 3, 2, and 1 thing.
All right. No baggy khakis again. Thank God. I'm so glad that era is over. Zayn has more energy in this video than all of One Direction put together. I was a little bored in this video. I'll own that. And reading this, I can honestly hardly remember what it is. I think this is the one where they're in London and they like go on the red bus.
Time.
Okay. Not a memorable One Direction music video for me.
All right. So for me.
All right. 3, 2, 1, go.
What are these poses? Why are they all in toys? Harry looks too young, but it can't be older than the What Makes You Beautiful video. Harry's youth perhaps correlated to the length of his hair, question marks. Little rainbow Niall's guitar strap. The outfits are like dapper 2010s, like church clothes. This is one of those videos where
you're... Okay, stop. 15 seconds. Okay, I noticed the rainbow guitar strap. I appreciated that too. Also, Harry's youth being correlated with the length of his hair. Now that is a conspiracy theory.
No, don't start conspiracies on the podcast.
All right. Live while we're young.
Listeners, you have to know that, like, Gray took too many notes when
I said 10 seconds.
Yeah,
he said 10 to 15.
She said 10 seconds. I said 15, and now I'm realizing, like, the length of time that 15 seconds is. So we're really going for it. I'm really going through it. Okay, so key. 3, 2, 1, and live while we're young.
When they poke their heads out of the tent, classic. What is Harry doing in this video? I have no idea. They're always doing that thing with their hands where they throw it downwards. Once I noticed it, I could never not notice it. Oh wait, he pointed up this time, actually. All these earlier videos have the exact same concept. Why is Harry Styles wearing a blazer?
Time.
All my takes. I timed this pretty well, I gotta say.
Okay.
All right. 3, 2, 1. Go.
And then the beach again, it's never ending party. Harry slept in a blazer, and I wish they couldn't say you wouldn't do that now, but he's just a little freak, isn't he? Really bug eyed on the rope swing with Louis. None of these videos thus far represent One Direction's main concert appeal, which is playing grab ass with each other on stage. Niall looks like sunglasses emoji. They party through the day into the night. What is the rowing dance?
All right, stop. I feel like we had a lot of the same takes. We pulled out Harry's blazer. Weird costume choice for this video.
I hope this is amusing to other people as it is to me.
It's very amusing to me.
So amusing.
All right, little things.
All right. Okay. 3, 2, 1, and little things.
wow, a different concept, actually. It's not just them hanging out outside where they all get together at the end and a bunch of girls are there for some reason. Liam pretends to play the guitar. Oh, Louis also pretends to play the guitar. Zane looks really good in this video, I'll say. The lyrics to this song, no. I'll say, I mean, what else could they have done with this song, really? This is really all they could have done.
No, what time, it is, it's time. You went over, you broke the rules. Okay.
Ready, set. Yeah. Go.
Worst song, worst music video, not the blown kiss. Harry sounds really good where he sings his worst lyrics his entire career. Stop looking at me, Harry. You are a demon here and does not pass the vibe check. I will love myself more than Niall loves me. How many of them could play the guitar at this point? I don't know. Harry being close to Ed Sheeran is a mark against his character.
Stop. Wow, a lot of repetitive themes here from our little things discussion earlier.
Okay. All right. 3, 2, 1.
Wait. We should say what it is. One Direction's video for the song Kiss You.
Kiss You. Okay. 3, 2, 1, and Kiss You.
Zayn and Harry on the bike. Love that. This one's actually really fun. Harry dancing in his snow pants is so cute. Is this One Direction's best music video? Question mark. It's exactly what it should be. Pokes a little bit of fun at their other music videos along the way. And it's just a really fun music video. And those are my thoughts overall.
And time. You made good time. Okay.
Okay. For me. 3, 2, 1, go.
Best music video. You love this one. Harry on the bikes, you freak. Lewis with a disappointing dance. Harry feeling up Zane. Chinny Chin Chins, no. I love when he covers up his second pair of nipples. Zane give a little kiss. This video is fully memeable. It's hard to even react to it. It's genuinely deeply iconic.
Stop.
Just dancing, yes.
All right, you got a lot of thoughts in there. I forgot about Harry covering up his second pair of nipples. I love that
never
too.
Forget the second pair of nipples.
That's
okay,
great.
Now we're going to best song ever.
Wow.
Okay. So 3, 2, 1, and best song ever.
Zayn and Veronica in this video, absolutely iconic. This video is an example of the Disney Channel acting method, aka just yelling all of your lines. The iconic Marcel, what accent is Harry doing? Would you think watching this video that Harry would go on to be in movies? Oh my God, not Leroy, the homophobia that is Ben Winston inflicting this version of Liam on us. I have a lot of opinions on
we have lots of opinions. Okay.
Okay. All right. 3, 2, 1, go.
Only thing justifiable about this is Veronica, except for Harry, as Marcel's cute. Louis and Niall have no comic timing. They just don't know how to deliver jokes. Liam's kind of hot as the choreographer. Harry flirt with Veronica, you slut. Liam shimmying, admittedly, he does a good shimmy. Zane checking him out, he's right.
I can't believe that you had 15 seconds to say all your takes and Liam is hot as Leroy the choreographer was one of the takes you chose. That's got to be the most cancelable opinion you've ever shared. That's a lot.
Listen, it's not defensible. And I don't it's really feel not. Good about it. I don't feel good about it at all.
All right, so now we're on to the story of my life video.
Okay. 3, 2, 1, and story of my life.
I like the device of them developing photos. This is by far Harry's worst hair era, and if you don't agree with me, you're wrong. It's a little weird. Singing the song with the pictures in the round is a little strange. I love the Anne's in it, though. A little nice shout out for Anne. Honestly, it's a nice video, and there's some nice moments in there.
Okay, 10. Okay.
Alrighty. 3, 2, 1, go.
They start out looking young men here instead of straight up boys. Liam aged 4 years in a year. Anne's here. Only good hair era for Lewis. Harry's just about to molt into long hair Harry era. He has yet to shed his skin. It's pretty sweet and lovely idea overall, but the execution is really weird.
All right. I gave you an extra second at the end there by accident, but I think that was a good summary.
Okay.
I will say, God, what take did you have here that I wanted to comment on that now just left my brain?
Was it that he's going to molt into his long hair Harry?
Oh, no. That you're going to get shit for calling Louis Lewis.
Oh,
I'll say,
God. Okay.
When you're saying their names quick, Louis becomes Lewis, evidently.
Yeah, kind of I just was not like a directioner at the time. And so I always get like, I don't hear his name said that much, you know?
That's fair. All right. Midnight Memories.
Okay, 3, 2, 1, and Midnight Memories.
Harry's hair, literally why. Other than that, the video's fine. I don't have any thoughts. Harry saying, call me at that old lady, why? Is this their bad boy era, question mark? Not my favorite 1D music video, but it's not terrible.
Okay, time. All right.
All right, 3, 2, 1, go.
In two album cycles, they really went from One Direction as wholesome bonfires to One Direction goes to dingy basement parties, huh? Harry grows closer and closer to shedding his skin. He's almost there to long hair Harry form. I guess they thought maybe their audience is older and like drinking age now, significantly worse than bonfire era.
All right, stop.
Listeners, I feel like I should explain that I personally believe that Harry's hotness evolves like a Pokemon, where like he reaches a peak and then he has to sort of like shed his skin. God, this joke, I swear to God, plays much better when I'm writing it out. I just think it's so funny. Like,
great, we're in an hour 46. Oh, we've got to power through this. We're only on you and I.
Okay. We have to get to it. All right. 3, 2, 1, and you and I.
This video straight up doesn't work. It's so bizarre. Harry's hair, again, not a good era. Some of the moments where they switch faces is so jarring. It's such a weird video. I will say I sort of like the effects at the end where they catch up with the images of themselves, but overall it's just not worth the totally whack beginning.
10.
All right. 3, 2, 1, go.
I hate everything about this video. I can't believe I have to rewatch it for commentary on it. Honestly, homophobia. Why would you do this? Who is this for? Is this Harry's worst hair ever? Listeners, discuss. This is an ugly two. Harry Lambert must be so scandalized watching these old videos. It must be said also that the song does not save the video because it is also not good.
I'm glad we agree that this is Harry's worst hair era.
Oh, so bad.
Some people say it's his best. I go into YouTube comments and they say that. And I'm like, literally, what are you talking about?
Homophobia. I don't like that. I don't like it at all.
All right, why don't you steal my girl?
Okay, and 3, 2, 1, steal my girl.
The concept of this video was so strange. I guess the concept, right, is like bringing life to the desert, but it doesn't translate. Who doesn't love Danny DeVito, though? Harry being the one that's quote-unquote love, accurate, just confused what they were trying to do. Song's great, though. Honestly, it's a fun video. Everything comes together in the end, and I kind of like it, even though it makes no sense. All right. 3, 2, 1, go.
DeVito is the greatest artist in generation, exactly. First Lambert-style video, love the cheetah coat. I think Danny doesn't even remember filming this, lol. Liam has exited his hottest era. Not all the One Direction boys can be hot at the same time. They have the equilibrium. Harry has ballerina, exactly. All ending wet.
All ending wet. I don't know if it was clear. The first thing that you said is DeVito is the greatest artist of his generation, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I appreciate that take. I agree. I love Danny DeVito.
Mm-hmm. I love Danny DeVito.
All right. Night changes.
3, 2, 1. Night changes.
Zayn looks so beautiful in this video. I just want to look at his face forever. I could just watch Zayn's face in this video forever. Liam takes a selfie with a back camera on his phone. What is he doing? Not the selfie camera. Certain parts of the video work better than others. Harry, baby deer in the ice rink. I'd play board games with the fire with Niall. Harry also looks great in this video. I like the concept. It could be awfully. Okay. Night changes in 3, 2, 1, go.
Harry finally molted. Good for him. He's so cute. How funny is it that he's playing to Ben Winston and David Suitar behind the scenes? Harry rolling his eyes at the nurse, checking him out. Please bring back Liam from Story of My Life era if I have to go on a date with him. I love leaning into your name. I'd love to go on 3 of 5 of these strappy young men. Hey, Zayn.
All right, now we're on to Drag Me Down. Do I even have 15 seconds worth of takes on Drag Me Down? We'll find out.
If you don't, that's okay. All right, so 3, 2, 1, and Drag Me Down.
Honestly, I feel like this video is okay. It's not the most fun video ever. There's not really rapport between the members, but that's fine. The part with Harry and the robot is fun. The song's so good that it makes the video work. They also got better at singing the songs during the choruses and videos. The way the camera moves is cool. It could have been even better, but the song is so good it doesn't matter. Alrighty. Mm-hmm. 3, 2, 1, go.
Harry's jacket during this video is so pretty. Harry Lambert again. Harry is properly hot now. He's in his second Pokemon evolution fully. Now I'm distracted by how hot he is and his little rainbow mug. I'm not really sure what this video is trying to be. I liked Harry. This is a good made in the AM single because they all do a little singing on the chorus. I miss Zayn.
Stop. Wow, that was a great 15 seconds. I'll say that comment reminds me to say that I did miss Zayn on Made in the AM. I didn't say that when we said that, but Zayn's vocals are always great, and I did miss him on that album. All right, now for the perfect video.
Okay. 3, 2, 1, and perfect.
Liam's meme face appears at the beginning. All of Harry's parts are great. I wish this was just a Harry song. The stupid black and white making us not see Harry's glorious pink silk shirt. Niall playing acoustic guitar when the song doesn't even have that instrument in the mix is forever funny to me. I love seeing Harry Lambert in there. Other members are lip syncing what Harry is singing, which is really funny. Niall playing the acoustic guitar. It is so funny.
Oh my God, it's so funny. Okay.
All right. 3, 2, 1, go.
I also hate this video. It's in black and white. Harry's clothes behind the scenes versus good. Black and white is continually fucking up Harry Lambert's work. Justice for him. Have noticed I made any AM singles. They're not really in the same room very much, huh? Just spreading the tea pool apart. But it's a stylistic thing in 1D videos where they're like, we want to show this making of, show the boom mic. Stop. Harry Lambert, hello.
Wow, the boom mic is a good spot.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, now we're on the last one.
Last one. Okay. 3, 2, 1, and history.
Can I really roast this one? It's good. It's just exactly what their last video should have been. We live forever, bitch, you liar. Niall's not included in the first kick line, which I find sad, but at least he gets in the second one, and they all go off in separate directions at the end, which is a very bold ending, but I like how truthful it is.
Time. Okay. My turn for the takes.
All right. 3, 2, 1, go.
Now including Zane in this, bold. Hiatus, sure, liars. Thought we were holding on, aren't we? You need to just imagine being a directioner with this strap. I would have strangled them all. This is not the end. Liars who lie. This musical video is why 5 years later, there are still teenagers on TikTok going, any day now, it's their fault they did it. We can make some more. No.
Done. Wow, that was a straight up rant. It's true. There's a lot we could say about this.
There's a lot to unpack here.
All right. Well, that is the end of our One Direction music video speed round. We hope you enjoyed. Are there any strong takes that you really wanted to say that you feel you did not get to say in the speed round?
No, I think that all my takes really needed to be limited to a speed round. Except for, you know, my takes on Harry's Pokemon evolution, which I think I'm just going to have to link my tweet to that in the description of the episode.
That's it. Made me hard joke. For me to just cut that.
I know, I did make it hard for you.
No, it's fine. I again will just say I find the One Direction music videos really, really fun. I find them just fun to just go back and watch. Some of them are bad, some of them I really like, but yeah, they're just really fun to go back and watch. So yeah, it's a nice part of the One Direction project.
Yeah. Okay, so now we are going to go into the songs that Harry wrote for One Direction. So
big mood shift here.
Big mood shift.
Let's breathe in and breathe out.
Okay, so first up is Happily, which is a song from Midnight Memories. I just feel like there's a lot of hey and ho in this song. It's just, it's not bad. It just commits the sin of being very unmemorable for me. The thing I can pinpoint that's very heinous about it, it just feels very, like, first draft. Like, he clearly has some growing to do as a songwriter here. And I just don't think that it's very, like, dynamic as a song. Sorry, Harry.
Yeah, I agree with the hey-ho of it all. This was a sound that I remember being on the radio a lot at the time. And so it kind of makes sense that it would make its appearance here. I don't like the hot potato vocal-to-vocal of this song. I think something that's going to run through all of these song discussions for me is that a central reason that a lot of One Direction's music is frustrating to me is that I just wish that Harry was singing the songs that he wrote. I get frustrated listening to these songs and hearing other people on it that aren't him. That's not always the case. There are a couple of moments where that's not true, but most of the time that's true. And I feel that frustration with almost all of these songs. So I don't hate it. It's fun. The chorus is just major fun, like sing-along campfire vibes. I'm sure live it would be a really fun song. Once again, there's too much production on it. I blame One Direction for that. I like how it ends with just his voice. I think that's a nice ending to the song. So yeah, those are my happily opinions.
Cool. So next we're going to go into the song Something Great from Midnight Memories. For me, I get the vibe sometimes that Harry really liked Mumford and Sons when they were popular, but this also sounds kind of like a Keane song. Like, I don't know if anybody is familiar, but it really reminds me of Everybody's Changing by Keane. They kind of had like a resurgence in 2012. So like kind of around when Midnight Memories was written beforehand, both these bands were kind of like in the ether. I can kind of tell that Harry picked up from them. So it sounds kind of like a mix of them, but then it sounds like this song was written with those influences and then handed over to a boy band that played Hot Potato with it. And it's just not, it's not better than the sum of its parts. Again, I do feel curious what it would sound like if Harry sang this himself, but not enough to like urge him to sing it. It's not, you know, amazing song, but I feel like it could be much better than it is.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. So I'll say, I like the song. I think the first chorus comes in just too big. But I like the lyrics. I like the simple kind of lyrics where you really feel the meaning behind it. Harry is really good at that. And so it's kind of cool that he's always been really good at that, since this is, like, as far as we know, one of the first songs that he wrote, at least that was released. So like, I Want You Here With Me, like how I pictured it, is just like a good lyric that just is exactly what it is. And the way that he sings it, you feel the meaning behind that. It's kind of, the song is a little bit messed up for me by the really prevalent, really strong backing vocals on it. I just wish that those were tamped down a little bit. And sometimes Harry pulls back the emotion on the song, like he wants you to relax a little bit, but the production doesn't follow his voice. So It just keeps hammering you while his instinct is good, right? His voice kind of comes down a little bit. It lets you relax a little bit, but that the instrumentation is still going.
I do have to say that is a frustration when listening to him on the songs that were produced, because you can tell that he had a certain instinct when singing it too. And it's not what ended up on the final table.
Exactly. Yeah. I point out, I think the end of verse two is when that happens. Mm-hmm. But yeah, overall, I think it's a sweet song. I think it's a sincere song. I'm obsessed with the end of the song and Zayn and Harry's vocals on it. They sound so good together. Like, it honestly makes me a little emotional, like, hearing the two of them sing that part. Like, the harmonies are just really good, even if the backing track is just screaming away. Like, it isn't so many of these songs, which I don't love. The two of them sound so good together harmonizing on that part. And that's one of those moments where I'm like, I'm so glad that Zayn is on this track. Like, even if I would wish maybe Harry sang the other verses of it, I'm so happy that Zayn comes in at the end there. But then somebody else comes in after that that just feels out of place. And you're reminded again of why the Hot Potato aspect of it is sometimes frustrating. But yeah, overall, that Zayn and Harry singing together moment is makes the song worth it for me. So yeah, those are kind of my thoughts on Something Great.
Next, we're going to talk about Stockholm Syndrome from 4. This song cracks me up. It's so cheeky, and I can tell Harry loved writing it and loved singing it. I love when he pulls it out to sing alone, because he's done that a few times and it's very fun. I love the club beat behind it, and I love the but the song is missing something, and I can't tell exactly what it is. I think the vocals sound too disjointed. Once Harry started writing for 4, it kind of started to feel like he was writing music that was meant to be sung by one person but then ended up being sung by 5. Not that I'm saying that like he didn't intend for it to be written for the band, just like I do kind of think that Harry seems to be better at writing for one singer rather than 5. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I mean, that makes sense. I think most of them are, because it is much easier to write for yourself than it is to write for a 5-piece band.
Right. So I think especially once they started writing music for the band, that is kind of why it sounds like that, because it's, you know, writing group music, you know, it's not really a 101 thing. Yeah. There's also, I will admit, there's a song called Stockholm Syndrome by a different British band called Muse that came out like 8 years before this song that is a better song than Harry's Stockholm Syndrome. Sorry, Harry, but I do like this one decently enough. How do you feel about Stockholm Syndrome?
Yeah, I think I like it. I think the beat comes in right and you think the song's going to sound different. So that's kind of a nice surprise when the song actually kicks in. Whoever put Harry and Zayn on the first verse, I love you. Thank you for that. There's a little sound effect in this song that reminds me of Woman. So that's kind of like an interesting little twist. Like, I like noticing, I think this appears in a couple other songs we're going to talk about coming soon. You can hear little stylistic distinctions that he then repeats in his later work. And so I think that appears here, which is kind of cool. I like the lyrics a lot. I wish that Harry sang this song, the whole song, by himself. It's just, I feel that way about a lot of these songs. I wish he sang the whole thing. The transition to the chorus of the song is great. I feel like this song kind of actually doesn't have some of those common 1D problems. I feel like most of the things in the song feel like they need to be there. production-wise, even if I wish it was a little different, maybe if it sounded a little bit more rocky, it does build as a song. Yeah, I like the meaning behind the song. I like what he was trying to do here, right? There's like a really kind of an interesting and funny commentary going on here about like fame and, you know,
his No, it's about a nympho.
All right, Harry loves telling Ben Winston that, but I'm not so sure about that. I think, you know, if you read the song the way that I think most people do about the paparazzi and about fame, I really find it to be an interesting song lyrically. And I think it's trying to say something. And a lot of One Direction songs aren't trying to say anything. And so I really like that aspect of it. I don't like love the song, but I like it a lot. So it's a good song off that album for me.
All right. So Where Do Broken Hearts Go from 4? This song, I'm so sorry, Harry. It's like a nothing of a song. I tried to...
People are not going to like this take.
I know. I tried to take notes on this like 3 times and spaced out every time. I just don't feel like this is a song that's about anything and not really for anyone.
Ouch.
Oh, I'm sorry. It is rough. It's not like personal. I just couldn't get into it. And I just couldn't. It was very slippery for me.
Not every song's for everybody. Yeah. So for me, I feel like I could totally tell that this is a Harry song. Again, like your typical One Direction problems. I feel like there's too much going on. But I love the chorus of the song. I love the high belt that Harry's doing for the whole song. Lyrically, I can tell that it's his song. I wish he sang the whole thing. I think this would be a really fun song at a concert to like just like scream that chorus. And I noted that Liam, when he sings one of the verses on this song, sounds like he's singing a country song. And I had a moment where I was like, should Liam Payne become a country singer? Because this is an interesting sound from him that I feel like he could lean into. And I noted one lyric of the song that I really like is, tell me where you go when you feel afraid. I just thought he sang that. And I was like, I wasn't paying much attention to lyrics, if I'm honest. And I was listening to the song and he said that and I was like, huh, I like that lyric. So yeah, definitely more positive on it than you.
I think that the issue that I have with this song is that it just shouts the entire time.
Yeah, it's definitely like an anthemic song and it wants to be that. And yeah, it's a lot of shouty.
Yeah,
stuff
Sorry, I'm going to get canceled for this, but I get canceled for all my takes anyway.
You're allowed to not like it. And our next one, we'll probably flip-flop, but
okay, yeah. So If I Could Fly from Made in the AM, the song has really nice restraint. It's just a lovely ballad with lovely lyrics. Its main failing is that 5 people are singing it. And I know this because Harry sang it all by himself, and it's amazing. Thank you, Harry. That's all I have to say. I think I said I liked it earlier, too. I really do.
I'm really mad at myself that I didn't watch his versions of some of these songs that he's done live as a solo artist. I'm realizing now that I just straight up didn't do that to prep for this episode, and I'm really mad that I forgot to do that because I haven't heard any of those. Like, I haven't heard him do Stockholm Syndrome. I haven't heard him do this. I just didn't look those up, and I'm mad now. So I'm sure maybe I'd feel differently about those songs if I had heard that. But yeah, this song reminds me of Falling. And if you listen to our Fine Line retrospective, you know, I think Falling is fine, but I don't love it. It's my least favorite song off of Fine Line. I think Harry, just like in Falling, he sounds great on the chorus of this song. He has a knack for pulling off lyrics that could be cheesy. So I think some of the lyrics of this song could be kind of cheesy, but he's just so genuine whenever he sings that he just carries that emotion really well. I think the violins come in too early. Again, I say this about, I feel like every slow One Direction song, but they're just like, oh my God, it's a slow emotional song. Oh, it's the first chorus. Let's bring in a bunch of violins, which is just like not something that I think is the right stylistic choice, but you know, whatever. I really like the melody on the chorus though, and the way that they sing that chorus melody. I think it's really nice. Yeah, the song definitely builds. I'm not totally sure if it earns how much it builds at the end. I like Harry's high harmony towards the end. I really like how it ends. So, you know, how it ends with like just his voice. He just sounds so genuine and emotional in the last line of the song that I really like that ending note. I think it really hits. But I think it's a shame. I wish it was more stripped down. I think it could have been a really nice quiet moment on the album. And I just think it just has to be like a big ballady song at the end. And that's just not what I want from it. But I understand that other people get different things out of it.
Cancelable.
I know. I'm sorry, you guys.
Okay. So Olivia from Made in the AM.
Wow,
I love
go
you,
on.
Olivia. What is there to say about Olivia except for the great grief I have for the version of Olivia that is only in my brain? I feel like I really got Olivia the first time that I listened to it, when there was this guy who did like the horns from Olivia. This was like sometime last summer or something. And I listened to it and someone had commented, it sounds like Penny Lane. And I was like, this is what was missing from the final cut of Olivia. It needed this instrumentation.
And Harry knew it too.
Like, everybody knows it, which, like, we all know that Olivia is like incomplete. I just feel like there are, you know, maybe some issues with the pacing, but when you fill it out with the instrumentation, it suddenly becomes like this lush and like, it's just something so beautiful to me. And I also feel like only Harry should be singing on it.
No, I agree. I feel the same way.
It doesn't feel like it feels disjointed because there's five people on it. It's clearly only supposed to be sung by one person. And it's not, the instrumentation is not there. So I guess I just like, I'm not reviewing Olivia ultimately on like its own current merits. It's fine the way it is. But like when I think of what it could be, it just makes me really happy that Harry is making his own music now and has control over all the production and stuff now, because I don't want another thing like Olivia where I have to like grieve over it, you know?
No, I think that's really insightful. I feel very similarly. I thought I was going to maybe have to fight you on this because I feel that frustration maybe might be a better word for the way I feel more than grief. I do see the potential in the song as well, and I feel frustrated listening to it because I just want to hear the version that I know could be out there that he sings and that has the correct production. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think it's a song with a lot of potential that's personally frustrating for me to listen to because I don't feel that it reaches that potential. I think the lyrics are really clever. So you can tell, right? Every time Harry talks about the song, he really wants you to know that it's not about a girl named Olivia, right? Like if it was, he'd say, like, he makes a point to say whenever it's mentioned, it could be a place. It could be like, he really wants you to know.
It could be the name of Taylor Swift's cat.
It could be. It very well could be. And I like that. I think there's the cleverness to that aspect of the lyrics where as the line descends into when he says mm-hmm. Olivia, there's a little wink to the audience there.
Uh-huh. The humor, it's his humor, right? We've talked about this before, both Key and I, talking about how Harry just likes to shitpost himself in his songs all the time. And we just thought, like, it's so funny if people are speculating, you know, who the song's about. And, like, there's that pause there before he says, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you, Olivia.
Yeah, it's very clever. Mm-hmm. So I really like that aspect of it. I love now hearing the backing track that starts our podcast. That brings me a lot of joy.
It's so beautiful.
Yeah. I do think, again, another aspect of the production that is frustrating to me is that I think the vocals on it are too polished.
I agree.
That is another frustrating aspect of it to me, where I just wish I could hear his raw vocal on this without those effects on it.
Harry, just leak the backing track of Olivia and then leak your demo vocals and we'll put it together for you. We can make this happen. Also, while you're here, leak the demo for Medicine. Leak it. I know you have it.
You guys, we've been recording for 2 hours and 15 minutes. Can you tell that we're a little loopy? I'm sorry if you wanted like really in-depth, serious discussions of these songs. I think it is just, you know, we just wanted to get all the One Direction stuff in this one episode. So we're powering through it. I hope that you're enjoying it. I am enjoying talking about all this.
Me too. I pitched to Key initially before I had listened to like all the stuff, like, should we do it in two maybe? And he was like, no, we shouldn't do it in two. And I was like, well, maybe we could. And then I listened to all the stuff and started taking notes. And I was like, Key, we need to just do this once. We can't do this again.
So I needed really to keep all this in my brain. I can't keep all of this in my brain, like all of my takes. I can't keep it all in my brain for two separate times.
OT5 people have so much more energy than I have for this stuff.
Oh, yeah, it's just so much content.
Oh, it is so much content. Okay, with two more Harry songs to cover, and then we'll have made it. Okay, so Perfect from Made in the AM.
Ironically, we're making this podcast in the AM right now.
Oh, don't curse me like that.
I'm full of puns today.
Oh my God, listeners. I had a full 8-hour work day today and I'm recording it. So, Perfect. This song, I want to like this song. I like the themes and the lyrics, but the pacing, it just doesn't do it for me. But I think that it's because, like, the mixing of it is just not good. It's just, like most of Harry's songs in One Direction, something is missing. And it's the production. Something is missing in the production. It's just not making this sing. It's nodding to the song Style by Tay Swift, and Style is a better song. Sorry, Harry.
Yeah, I'll say the YouTuber Todd in the Shadows did a review of this song that plays them both simultaneously back to back. So if you're like, I mean, I don't know, maybe people are like, oh, that's obvious. I've always known the production and the sound and the instrumentation behind this song matches Style. But if you haven't heard it, listen to the two songs back to back because they are very similar. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, in an intentional,
right? It's funny a nod. Way. It's a nod. It's definitely like, you know, not like stealing or anything. It's just like, yeah. There's just something missing about it. I don't totally know what it is. It's just, I don't know. Key likes this song better than I do.
Yeah, I disagree. I don't think anything's missing from it. I think it's great. I love this song. This is one of my favorite One Direction songs. Drag Me Down into Perfect is just an amazing, like, 1-2 pop punch for me on Made in the AM. I just think it's a great song. I think it takes its time. I think, it cleverly riffs on Style by Taylor Swift. The lyrics, I think, of this song are really good. So you can totally tell it's written by Harry. So lyrically, I just wanted to point out here, right, it's a good song lyrically for the whole song, but then the bridge is really where it subverts what you think the song is about, right? So it's all like, you know, I might never be your knight in shining armor. I might never be the one to take you home to mother. Like, I can be the one. I can be the one for you. Baby, you're perfect. It's very, like, it seems sincere, right? Like,
yeah, absolutely.
And then you get to the bridge and it says, and if you like cameras flashing every time we go out, if you're looking for someone to write your breakup songs about.
That line is so funny.
Yeah, first of all, that line is great. It's very on the nose, but I love it. It's very hairy. And second of all, I just think I just like that it subverts that aspect of the song. So it's like the whole song's like, you're perfect, right? We're perfect together, which I think is kind of a trite song to write. Like, I think if it was just that, I don't know if I'd like it as much. But then when you get to the bridge, it's like, oh yeah, we're perfect also for the bad stuff. If you like, or not even for the bad stuff, but for the show of it all, right? It's not just about in hotel rooms anymore. It's about the public facing aspect of it. And it's about the shit aspects of it too, you know? And so not only are they perfect for all those other moments and all the, like, the typical romantic song moments, but it is this acknowledgement of, like, of the public facing aspect of the relationship that this song was written about. And again, I'm obviously not somebody who thinks that was all there was to this relationship, but I find that this song explicitly acknowledging it in this way. If you like cameras flashing every time we go out, I'm perfect for that. If that's what you want, if you want us to be discussed, if you want the fame, it's a jaded element to the song, which I really like, and I think adds a three dimensionality to it.
Wow, I love that analysis, Key. Key is coming in with some amazing takes. I love that. Thank you so much for, like, sharing that with me. That's amazing.
Oh, thanks for appreciating it.
Yeah.
I think it's really cool. I think, so I really like the aspect of it. But musically, too, I think I really, really enjoy the song. Just a couple little moments that I'll touch on before I wrap up here. The moment when the backing track changes underneath the song, I think it's probably towards the bridge, maybe right after the bridge, the first time the other lyrics come back in, there's like this lower hum in the backing track that I really, really like. And then it comes big at the end. I do feel like this song builds. Like this song, I feel like, earns the build and the place that it ends the song at. So I feel like it actually deserves it. And yeah, so Harry in the track by track for Made in the AM mentions this being kind of a not romantic love song. And so I find he doesn't mention so much the comment on fame. So I just find it a really interesting song, and I think there's a lot of opportunity there to pick it apart and to analyze it from that perspective. So I really like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Thank you. That's perfect.
That was awesome. All right, so one song left. Walking in the Wind from Made in the AM. I always forget how much I love this song. It's great. There's too much going on in some parts. And it's one of those songs where it'd be better if it was just one person singing it, not five. Yeah, I guess that was the general take that I had.
Yeah, I like this song too. I really like how Harry's vocal is very restrained when the song starts. Again, a lot of the production issues and personal preference things that I have for a lot of One Direction music is at play again in the song. I think there's a little bit too much to start out the song and it doesn't quite build the way that I want it to. But I like the lyrics for the song a lot. They're very simple but emotionally evocative. I think his vocal, or his, I should say, his lyrical style is very noticeable. So maybe I'm projecting this. I don't know how distinctive his style actually is. I feel like when I listen to the song, I'm like, Harry wrote this and I can tell.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I wish it built a little bit more from chorus to chorus. But what made me really like this song, actually, because I liked it, but I was like, I'm not in love with it. What made me really like it is the "We'll Be All Right, Child" element of it. And I listened to that and it reminded me of Sign of the Times.
He really likes to say "we'll be all right."
He loves reassuring people through music, and "We'll Be All Right, Child," bringing back those memories to me of Sign of the Times being written from a mother to her baby. Seeing that kind of thematic through line through a lot of his work, I really liked seeing that this early. And yeah, so that made me really like the song. Other than that, yeah, again, I think there's a lot of opportunity here for the song to be better. So in that way, it's a little frustrating to me because I think there are things about it that could make it really great. But overall, I do like it.
Yeah. Okay.
Wow.
Wow. Okay. We're in the home stretch, Key. We are.
And I'll say too, I think, because I don't know if we said this off the top of that section, but I think it's really interesting. If we're going to be exploring Harry's career in the depth that we are, I think it's important to look at One Direction. And I think it's important to look at these songs. I think it's very rewarding to notice the through lines and to kind of start to see those thematic threads that emerge musically, you know, lyrically, these things. I really enjoy spotting those elements. So, you know, we wanted to kind of look at Harry's songs from One Direction. I picked, you know, the One Direction songs that just he's the only One Direction member credited on as a writer, or him and in Perfect's case, one other person, Louis, is credited on that song as well. But all the other ones, it's just Harry and other writers that are not the other members of One Direction. So that's kind of what was the thought process there. But yeah, if you have any thoughts on those songs, please let us know. I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on them.
Send us hate mail.
or don't.
Send us nice mail. Okay, so now we're going to have a little conversation about Harry's general current and future association with One Direction. So what do we think that Harry's association with One Direction will be as time goes on?
Yeah, so I think Harry is notably very positive about One Direction, or at least is not overtly negative. And that's actually pretty unique. Like, a lot of the other One Direction members are positive about it overall, but they do have very specific elements of their time in One Direction that they point out that were very hard. And I think too, like, that is something that I really like to keep in mind when I think about One Direction. And this is not me in any way judging anyone who loves One Direction, loves that time, loves these people. If I've gotten anything from this past week, it is a deep understanding of that. And from watching these videos and everything, I understand where you're coming from on that. But, you know, hearing from Liam and from Zayn, especially some of the troubles that they went through during this time, I can't help but take that with me too when I look at this music. And so,
Harry, when he talks with journalists and stuff, I always try to keep in mind that, like, he knows what the media is for and doesn't really want it to work against him. He doesn't really want it to hurt anybody that he's ever worked with. So if he had, you know, similar or slightly different problems to the ones that, like, Liam and Zayn talked about, he probably wouldn't say it because he's not really like that about his collaborators or, like, his time, which is not saying, like, they shouldn't have spoken about it. It's just Harry is very reserved. So it is, I do think, valuable to listen to the stories of people who were also in the band with him who are a little less reserved personally than Harry is. And sort of to infer he probably was going through, you know, not identical stuff, but he probably had a challenging time too, but prefers to focus on more positive things, both because he's just that type of person, and because he doesn't really want, you know, the kind of media firestorm that would be like Terry yeah. Styles has beef about One Direction. Like, he wants to have his career now. He doesn't want to be pulled down by that or have anybody else bothered either.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. I think, you know, experiences are so complex, right? I think there's a lot of room in all of their discussions mm-hmm. of it and the different ways that they feel about it. And I find, again, as somebody who isn't really a fan of One Direction, I have always been very fascinated by the things that they've said about their time in the band. I find, you know, five, at the beginning, completely normal people being elevated to that level of fame and wealth at such a young age, I think inevitably is gonna, you know, cause some problems and is gonna have some positives and some really deep negatives too. And so I find mm-hmm. that very fascinating to hear from about them. And I think you're right. I think probably he feels a lot of complex feelings about it. I don't think by any means, please don't take this as us saying that he's like not being truthful when he speaks to the positive
right.
memories that he has in the band. I have no doubt that that is the truth for him. But I do think that there is a choice being made here to focus on, because everything he says about it is extremely, extremely positive. And I definitely think that he's making a particular choice to speak about it that way.
Yeah, I agree. I think that Harry understands where he came from, and he doesn't want to disrespect the time that he spent in the band enjoying, you know, his fans and enjoying performing by saying this and that about any of the negative things that he may have experienced or the interpersonal conflicts. And that's just kind of, he's just not like that. And, you know, that's a personal choice. And I definitely understand that mindset. Like, if I were to be interviewed about a certain experience that had both high points and low points, and I knew it was going to be published, you know, and repeated for years to come, I probably would be like, yeah, just focus on the best stuff about it too. Because why do you want to see that, you know, dug up? But I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe I'm just projecting at this point. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I think it's hard to know. I think, again, I'm very interested as time goes on to see the ways that they all speak about it and if that changes and if that doesn't change. But I think that Harry too, so I have some quotes here, right? So from this year, in fact, or last year, it's 2021, everybody. In Vogue magazine, Harry said, "I think the typical thing to come out of a band is to come out of a band like that. I almost feel like you have to apologize for being in it, but I loved my time in it. It was all new to me and I was trying to learn as much as I could." I also have here a quote from the 2017 profile in Rolling Stone that he did, where he said, or the article said, that in late 2014, Styles first brought up the idea of One Direction taking a break. He says, "I didn't want to exhaust our fan base. If you're short-sighted, you can think, let's just keep touring. But we all thought too much of the group to let that happen. You realize you're exhausted and you don't want to drain people's belief in you." So I find both of those quotes kind of indicative of the kind of complexities of that you can mm-hmm. really love something and heartily enjoy the kind of high highs of it while also acknowledging like five
He's
albums
tired.
In 5 years and five and four tours. It's like so much work. They were worked so hard. And yeah, I think, yeah, there's a lot of complexity there.
So, yeah. So having said all of that, do you want a One Direction reunion, Kate?
Yeah. So this year, right, or again, this past year, technically, over this summer was One Direction's 10-year anniversary. And there was a lot of discussion.
And didn't Liam let me know it? Oh, that Liam Payne. Okay. He has probably some of the most cursed stories from One Direction. I am trash and listen to like all his little like interviews and stuff because it's the pandemic and what else do I have going on other than more Liam content? But he
sounds so resigned when you said that.
The listeners of the podcast are going to think that my ratings of One Direction numbers are Harry first, Liam number two. Liam is last. Like, maybe he's number four. but I do, he is offering lots of content. So, he is very fascinating to me. I once made a Venn diagram of different One Direction members and there were different qualities, and Liam's qualities included deeply troubled by One Direction and really excited about a One Direction reunion. And I said, this is a really cursed combination,
King. Yeah, I find him very interesting.
But yeah, so he definitely was very much teasing at that last summer. And I was just like, it's not.
Yeah, I got to say, not much happened. Not much happened for the 1D 10-year reunion. Everybody spoke about it. Well, I guess Zane didn't, but the four members of the band that ended the band together spoke about it.
I love Zane.
Yeah, we love Zane on this show. To be clear, if I haven't mentioned his vocals enough in the show, pretty recently actually, my love for Zane has climbed a lot. And I like Zane a lot. But yeah, the four of them spoke about it and their messages were sweet. I'd imagine I enjoyed seeing everybody be so excited about One Direction for that week of my timeline. At that moment, I couldn't relate because I didn't hear any of the music and I don't have that association from that time in my life. But it was fun to see everybody having so much fun. So I guess where I sit on it is I want Harry to do what he wants to do. And that's basically how I feel about it. So if Harry, what I don't want, I'll say this. What I don't want is One Direction to come back together and make more music. I don't want that. I very firmly do not want that. What has emerged, I think, from our conversations today is that One Direction's music is very frustrating to me because I find the solo members' music, particularly Harry's, to be so much more enjoyable and full and an artistic expression of a human being. And I find it so much more satisfying. And so I think it'd be a real shame, if I'm being honest, if they got back together to produce music. Now, I don't think that's going to happen. I very firmly don't think that's going to happen. I think it's possible that without Harry, maybe Niall, Louis, and Liam could do some sort of project. What I could see happening is a decade from now, 2 decades from now, some sort of tour to happen, some sort of brief, a few cities tour. If it was one concert, I definitely think Harry would do it.
I just had a thought. Mm-hmm. I know that Liam Payne's looking for new songwriters because they keep making him have too many sexy songs, he said on a podcast recently. What if Harry wrote songs for Liam? He would actually write him good songs to sing.
I mean, he would not do that, but I support that fantasy. Can you imagine, though? The internet would explode.
I would explode. I would be so happy. I would just feel like bubbly that day. It would be great. It'd be fantastic. But Harry would never. He would probably like ban me from his concerts if he knew I said something like that. I would be on like the very short block list of people for having that idea.
Probably. But I find, again, I think that, you know, this past week, I do feel like I understand where One Direction fans are coming from a lot better.
I do too.
And I can completely understand that there's a desire for some sort of, you know, acknowledgement of what happened from these people in some sort of substantial way, whether that being the four of them sitting on a couch 20 years from now talking about it with James Corden, whether that be a concert for a charity. I think that could be interesting. And basically what it comes down to, my opinion, is like if Harry wants to do it, if he would find that fulfilling, if he would find that enjoyable. I'm kind of along for the ride. I would find that fun. I would live tweet a concert if that happened. I also would not be disappointed if it didn't happen. Yeah, I'm very interested to see in the next couple of years, not really the next couple of years. I don't think anything will happen in the next couple of years. And over the next few decades, how they all continue to speak about it and how they all continue to choose to engage with it. But yeah, I find their solo ventures, some of them anyway, to be much more artistically interesting. And I have no desire for that to change in the future.
Well said. Okay. Well, I think that wraps up what I have to say for the main section as well. Any final thoughts?
I guess one thing I will say is I think that Harry actually is very respectful talking about One Direction. And I would love in the future for One Direction to be a pit stop in his history that, you know, everybody acknowledges and respects, but that isn't, that doesn't take up as much space as I think it currently does. And again, that's just my opinion. It wasn't a big part of my life. For some people, it's a huge part of their lives. I think we're kind of reaching that point in Harry's career where they might stop mentioning it as much in profiles, in whatever. I would like to get to that place personally. I would kind of like for his work to speak on its own. That's not a diss on One Direction. That's not a diss on any of the other members. I just personally would have a desire for his work to kind of speak on its own outside of that. So I hope that at some point in the future we get to that point, but who knows?
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
We will see.
You know, probably the most exciting time to be a One Direction fan is 10 years from now when all of the memoirs and stuff start popping out of the shelves.
I will read those avidly, I am sure.
Oh, me too.
Just one thing I want to say to end it, and I think we're going to skip Toxic and Community because Lord knows we've been recording for 2 hours and 40 minutes.
We didn't find much good anyway. I mean, like, people have been doing nonsense, but there hasn't been any truly hilarious nonsense recently. And it's more of a goal to, like, not bring the end of the podcast down. So if, like, if all the Toxic Community that week is somebody's leaked Harry's address again, like...
Yeah, don't fucking do that.
Just don't stop.
It's not funny, and I have no desire to make jokes about that.
Nope.
Yeah, but so to just skip that then, I will say, so I really enjoyed this week, even though my mind was boggled at times. And I feel like I'm holding so much in my brain. And I don't think that anyone should listen to all 5 One Direction albums as much as I did this week. I would not recommend it. I did have a good time. And I had a good time watching interviews. I had a good time thinking about it. I had a good time watching live performances. I had a good time with it. I had a good time researching. And yeah, I do feel like I have a better understanding now of where a lot of people are coming from. And I find that very enjoyable. So I hope that even if you are a One Direction fan and that's a big part of your past, I hope that you didn't get too upset at our takes. And I hope that this episode was enjoyable to you. And yeah, and if you're a new fan like us, I would not recommend listening to all 5 albums like 5 times in 1 week. But I do think if you have any spare time, check it out. Watch some old interviews. I do think it's an interesting and fulfilling part of being a Harry fan to kind of rediscover all this recent history.
Mm-hmm. And if you listen and you haven't heard before, let us know what you think. I definitely think that the music, it is best when you're not analyzing it for a podcast. So send me your little ads about your Take Me Home and Up All Night takes. I will still be listening to them. So I think we'll move into the outro. Key, are you looking forward to any non-Harry things? Anything bringing you joy in these difficult times?
Yeah, so in a totally different realm, the show WandaVision on Disney Plus is the next iteration of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. As I've said before, my toxic trait is loving the monoculture and being a socialist who loves the MCU, which I feel like I always have to preemptively apologize for, even though everyone loves it, so it's literally fine. I have been really enjoying WandaVision. I think it's interesting. I kind of wish that I could just binge it all at once, but you know, it's week to week, so it's keeping me going each week. And on another Disney Plus front, I've been watching The Mandalorian. And all I have to say about that is that Baby Yoda is really cute. And that's not a new take, but it is a take. And he's really adorable. And if you have some time and you just want to watch a cute baby in the galaxy, that's a fun show as well. So I've been enjoying those this week. What about you?
Well, I was writing up a lot of stuff for this episode. I was listening to a lot of Queen. And so that was really fun. I hadn't listened to Queen in a while, and that was really good. This YouTuber I like, ContraPoints, she came out with a new hour and a half long video that I've already watched like 3 times, and I love her so much. It's just really good. You should check her out. She's great. It was like an hour and a half just dissecting like the origins of bigotry and using J.K. Rowling as a case study, and it meant a lot to me just as, you know, as a trans person who has been really damaged by online transphobia and is pretty hurt by just all the stuff surrounding that, the JK Rowling situation. So if you need some catharsis, if you need another trans person to sort of give you a hug about it, learn a little bit more about how bigotry forms, highly recommend it. But yeah, ContraPoints and Queen, I feel like she would be happy to be referenced in the same breath.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. I feel like Harry would be too.
Mm-hmm. All right, Key, do you want to tell our listeners where they can contact us?
Yeah, so you can contact us at weblameharrystyles@gmail.com on Twitter and Tumblr. We can be found at Harry Styles Pod. You can follow us there, DM us there. Let us know what you think of the show. So one way you can do that is to rate and review our podcast. We'd so appreciate it if you took a second and gave us a rating if you enjoyed this.
Subscribe to us in your preferred podcast host to become notified of our next episode. Thank you for listening. We love you. Talk to you next time. Bye.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Louder.
Lights out and they know who you are. Know who you are.
for now.